Good morning. We'll open our meeting by repeating the Lord's Prayer, followed by the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag. Our Father, which art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. Lead us not to temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory forever. Amen. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Approval of the agenda. You all have a published agenda. Any additions or corrections to the agenda?
I'd like to ask if we could pull on the in old business the first conditional use 1697 to be placed back on sometime in the future. I still am just not comfortable with voting on that yet.
Opinions?
I'm ready.
I mean, I thought that was the reason we discussed it last Tuesday,
right.
To make sure everybody was comfortable with it. And, you know, if you'd spoken up then, I'd been more than happy to not ask it be put on. But we've deferred on it for a number of months now. And I know your concern is about the parking, but I think we can probably resolve that this morning. What's the other feeling? Leave it on or off?
Oh, there's also the question, and maybe Mr. Griffin could answer this, with respect to this application. This is commercial property, commercially zoned property.
I think it is, but because it's an amusement, it has to go through the conditional use process.
Yes, right. It's C1.
I think the underlying zoning is commercial.
And has there been a change in the code in the last 10 years that causes an amusement use to have to go for conditional use? At one point,
Jane might know that. I'm not sure.
Yes.
It is in commercial, and back in the early 90s, when bungee jumping was the hot item,
right.
there was an ordinance amendment requiring all types of amusements go conditional use.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That was like 92 or 93, I believe.
So nothing in the last 10 years.
Well,
okay.
As I say, I'd like to pull that from the agenda today. If I could get a second, we could vote on it at least.
Mr. Phillips has made a motion to.
I'll second it for a vote. I mean, I'm ready to vote on it, but I'll second it for a vote.
I have a motion, Mr. Phillips, second to Mr. Cole to defer or pull on the old business CU 1697. Mr. Cole?
No.
Mr. Phillips?
Yes.
Mr. Rogers?
Out of respect to Mr. Phillips as his district, I'm ready to vote, but I'll vote to let him defer if he decides to.
Mr. Jones? My vote is no. I think we should have been notified last week on this. We did in public session. I asked everybody if it was agreeable to put these on, and everybody agreed to it. I hate to go against Mr. Phillips. It is his district, but I think that we've deferred long enough. And I'm a stickler on getting old business done as much as possible on the last meeting of the year, and that today's the day. So my vote is no, motion is denied. Any other additions or corrections to the agenda? I have a motion to approve.
Absolutely.
Have a motion, Mr. Cole, seconded by
second
Mr. Rogers. To approve the agenda as distributed. Mr. Cole?
Yes.
Mr. Phillips?
Yes.
Mr. Rogers?
Yes.
Mr. Jones?
Yes.
Yes, motion's carried. Approval of the minutes.
Make a motion to approve the minutes?
What's the date? Is that November the 27th, Gay? Well, there are not any.
He says there aren't any.
Well, let's not approve them then. Maybe we don't have any. Sorry about that.
I vote no.
We'll skip right over the approval of the minutes. Correspondence, Mr. Griffin.
Looks like we've got quite a few items today. Let's see. The first one is thank you from the directors of the Laurel's Kid Connection Program. thanking you for participating in a press conference to launch that program and telling you that it is officially underway and will begin in January, coinciding with the National Mentoring Month. A letter saying thank you to County Council and Mr. Dukes. We appreciate the work that was done at our home. Without those repairs, says that their home would not be nearly as nice. They have a new bathroom, new floors, new carpet, and that the county and staff were very efficient, and they thank you. Letter from the town of, or a copy of a letter sent by the town of Milton to Milton residents, announcing the celebration of the 150th anniversary of the town. Or I'm sorry, they're saying that in January 1958 they buried a time capsule with instructions to open it in 2007 during the 200th anniversary. And on January 12, 2008 at 3 p.m. in the Milton Theater, they will unite to open that cement box in front of the theater and members of town council and members of the 200th anniversary advisory committee, and you are invited to attend. Thank you from the program known as Primeros Pasos for a donation to their program. Letter from a program known as The Way Home, thanking council for a contribution to their program that gives ex-offenders a new way to be integrated into the community and avoid a return to a life of crime. A letter from Easter Seals to Mr. Baker expressing their sincere appreciation for a contribution by council under the Human Services Grant Program. A letter from the Read Aloud program thanking council for a contribution to their program. A letter from the Greater Georgetown Chamber of Commerce thanking you for helping them to make the 2007 Christmas Parade a success. A letter from the Delmarva Christian High School thanking council for a donation to offset expenses of their fitness center. A letter from the BB Medical Foundation thanking council for support of their 20th annual foundation Thanksgiving ball. A letter from the Lower Delaware Autism Foundation thanking council for a human services grant. That's all the correspondence, unless someone has another item they'd like to pass down.
Any other correspondence, Madam Council?
Hearing none, Mr. Baker.
Good morning. The first item of business I have is a presentation of the first Sussex County flag. And with us today is Mr. William Scott and his wife Janet Scott. I don't know if they'd like to come up, but in 2008, Sussex County will celebrate its 325th anniversary. And 33 years ago, in 1974, Mr. Scott from Selbyville was a member of the County Bicentennial Committee, which was preparing for the 1976 celebration. Mr. Scott designed the first and only Sussex County flag after considerable research. It is a combination of the flag of the Netherlands and the 1683 Sussex seal, which is a sheaf of wheat adopted by William Penn. On December 3, 1974, the County Council adopted Mr. Scott's Sussex County flag. And last spring, Mr. Scott graciously offered the very first flag that he designed to the County Council to be kept for posterity. And Mr. Guy has worked with frame makers, and Mr. Parsons is here also, and they have had the flag framed, and this was the first one.
Is Mr. Scott here?
Yeah. Could you come up, Mr. Scott? Would you
bring your wife with you?
Yeah,
she probably had a lot to do with it.
Her name's Betsy.
What?
Her name's Betsy.
Betsy. Oh, Betsy. Did she hear it? Oh, she heard it.
Smile, Chip. It's Christmas.
Come
on, smile, Chip. Don't you want your picture, Pip? You want me to look like that in the paper?
Molly talked about you in the paper.
We've had the flag framed so that it will be preserved, and we'd like to hang it above where Jackie sits in the building so the public can, everyone can see it. Mr. Scott, would you like to make a few comments, or?
Come on, say something.
You got to say something while you're down here.
No, I'm just, I'm pleased that the flag is going to find a home now and be preserved for posterity. It was just sitting in my desk, folded in a box, and so now I want to leave it for everybody else to enjoy.
Absolutely.
It's an honor.
Well, we appreciate that very much. We're going to put it right here in the entrance as you come in, so it'll be seen every day.
Chip showed me where it was going. It's a very prominent spot.
Did you ever consider a watermelon instead of a sheath?
You have to take that up with William Penn. That was William Penn's idea. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'd like to thank Mr. Scott for his help in this. Actually, the genesis
of this.
Your name,
just say for the record, please.
Come on, tell me. Name for the record. Chip Guy, Public Information Officer.
Thank you.
This actually all started back in April, I believe, when I received a message from Councilman Phillips wanting to know what the flag's history was. And there wasn't anything that was readily accessible that could shed some light on how the flag came into being. So I researched it a little bit and worked my way back through former County Administrator Joe Conaway, who led me to Bill Scott, and Bill was gracious enough to.
Sure, you got the real scoop from Joe.
Well, you know. Well, all he did was get me in touch with Bill Scott. So.
All right.
But Mr. Scott was very gracious with his time and in helping me to learn a little bit more about the flag's history. And back then, he decided to donate the flag, which we withheld from you, so that we can present this to you as an early Christmas gift. So we thought this was important to preserve, and it's behind UV protectant glass, so it can sit there in the lobby for years to come and be enjoyed by all who pass through these halls.
We appreciate that. What's on the plaque?
On the plaque, it says
here.
Thanks. I wrote it. I should know. Sussex County. I'm sorry. Original Sussex County flag. Designed in 1974 by Mr. William C. Scott of Selbyville, Delaware. Donated by Mr. Scott to Sussex County Council in 2007 on the eve of Sussex County's 325th anniversary.
Thank you. Appreciate
and the history
that.
Is also available on the web. We wrote something back in May to go along with it, and we hope to at some point put a little bit more in terms of the history on display with the flag there in the lobby.
Good. Did a good job, Chip. Yep. Thank you.
Mr. Baker.
Okay. The next item on the agenda is legislative issues, and I have a couple of minutes, but the first item I'd like to talk about is something we discussed back in October, which is possible legislation regarding special development district financing and tax increment financing. On October 2nd, the County Council authorized the county to move forward in preparing this draft legislation, which is enabling legislation. Mr. Hal Simons from our county bond counsel from Potter Anderson and Croon prepared the proposed legislation. And I'd like to just again highlight some of the major points in the summary that he put together in the front of the handout. Again, there are two parts. One is tax incremental financing, the county would be enabled to create a TIF district and then be enabled to issue revenue bonds for the purpose of providing infrastructure within that district. And then the bonds would be paid off by the county tax that a portion or all of the county tax that is attributable to the new property within that district. At this time, the TIFs are probably not a very practical matter for us. We don't really envision a lot of use of that, but that enabling legislation does include a section with that. The other item here is special development districts. These districts, the legislation would give the county the power to designate special development districts for the purpose of various infrastructure items, as noted, including storm drainage systems, sewers, water, roads, streets, sidewalks, lighting, recreation facilities, open space, farmland preservation, etc. The county would be enabled to charge a separate tax, a special tax, which would apply just to that district over and above any other county or school taxes. And that tax money would be used to pay off the revenue bonds. In order to establish a district, the county would first have to request or would first receive a request from the owners at least two-thirds of the property, and the use of the lands must be consistent with a comprehensive plan. So this is a draft of the legislation. This is enabling legislation. The county council could determine parameters or guidelines at a later date or on a case-by-case basis if you'd like. But the purpose of the legislation would be provide a means for new developments to pay for infrastructure needed due to the impact that our development. And if the council is in concurrence, then Mr. Godwin and myself would attempt to attain General Assembly support for the bill. I don't know if you'd like to discuss that, or we wanted to bring that to your consideration as something that we could discuss with the General Assembly in the January session.
Is there any minimum size acreage requirement for the SDD?
No, I don't think in the legislation there is a minimum size requirement. But however, I've been told that it probably would not be practical for developments that are smaller than 300 to 500 homes. So this would be another tool. It's not something that would work for every development.
We could, in our ordinance or as they come to us on an individual basis, set the parameters of what the money could be used for. I mean, I think the feeling was when we discussed it a few months ago that just to take it for infrastructure inside of the subdivision really was not fair, or was not what it was. I didn't think it was intended for. What we're talking about mainly, what I thought we were talking about was off-premise improvements that was being required, more than on-site improvements.
Right, and that's the improvements that are funded would have to be owned by the county or state government or maybe the conservation district or a governmental agency. So, and it could be used for off-site improvements. Now, the improvements have to be directly related to the development.
Right.
So that, you know, if it's...
That's going to be difficult, too, because, you know, we've asked DLDOT in some discussion about requiring a description of how far you can ask for something to be improved for a subdivision. And where, for instance, they were asking for one stoplight 10 miles from the site, and that had no direct improvement on the subdivision 10 miles away. So that probably would not be able to be funded if they required that.
Right. Possibly a portion of it could be. In Millsboro, there was various items that were funded through their special development district financing. And some of them were only partially funded through the bond, through the Special Development District bond. A determination was made that, say, like in that case, say 20% of that those traffic improvements would be directly related to the new development, then that 20% could be funded with a bond, and then the 80% would not be funded with a bond.
I would like to see DLDOT only be able to require what's directly coming from that subdivision, instead of being able to pick something out of their wish list that they've had on the books and were hoping they'd get it done and say, okay, it's your turn, we're going to get this one. You know, and I think that they're grabbing sometimes instead of saying this is going to have a direct impact from the subdivision, so this is what needs to be improved.
Under this scenario, the developer would make the request to council, and council would determine what would be included. And the magic words that they use in here, if it's off-site, is it must provide a service or a benefit to the specific development for which the bonds are issued. So you would be making that determination, not DLDOT.
And if they didn't like it, Jim, then they would be challenging us on what we were requiring of them. My only concern, gentlemen, is we have some infrastructure that we're responsible for, which is what, David?
Sewer.
Sewer and water, basically, right? And here we are talking about trying to come up with some kind of financing thing in special tax districts, because I don't want to be part of adding, you know, being creating new taxes for Sussex County residents for stuff we're not responsible for. So I think we ought to just, you know, all you're talking about is roads and other problems we're having here.
Off-site.
Off-site. Those are state responsibilities. Let them come up with a financing thing, or we come up with a joint thing with the state and the county where we collect impact fees or something, and a certain amount of money goes to the state infrastructure, and a certain amount will go to the county infrastructure. But we shouldn't be collecting money for state problems at this point, unless we're going to take some additional responsibility for it.
We collect our school taxes for them, isn't it?
We just collect it and pass it on, though, Dale. I mean, I'm talking about, this is different. This is different, because this is set up, these special tax districts are used in other areas for infrastructure on site, and the big question is how far out can you go, and where are the benefits going to be? And it's going to be a big debate and a big question, and will be challenged. And I don't think we're going to get the desired effect that you all would like to see, financial help with these infrastructure problems as we develop the county.
So one option.
I don't think it's going to work.
We could limit the. And it's not in this enabling legislation, but we could limit the amount of the bonds to the value of off-site improvements provided, so that. Even though the bonds themselves might be, by doing that, the bonds themselves could be allocated to some of the infrastructure within the development, possibly, but the total amount of the bonds would be limited to the off-site improvements, and that's one possibility.
Only off-site, because we have been developing this county now for 30 years. We've seen a lot of going on, and the developers have been paying for the stuff on-site, and it seems to be working. I don't know why we're tampering with it, and that's what they're going to want. They're going to want us to, you know, add in, you know, street lights and sidewalks to this special thing, and then they'll throw in a token,
but that's,
you know,
on site.
Traffic light, right? We shouldn't be doing that. We should stay out of it.
You haven't heard anybody say we should.
I know.
Do
well,
it on site.
Well, that's what this does. This is what this is for.
No, it didn't.
Special tax districts are primarily, Dale, have been set up for on-site improvements. When Americana Bayside came here, they wanted us to finance their on-site stuff and do it, and they'd have a special tax district for their new owners, you know, coming into that subdivision, not for off-site stuff. So,
well, if we allow that to go on, but you can set it up so it's for off-site only, not on-site.
Well, that's what I need to hear. I don't think this says that.
I've said that, I think, three times.
Okay, but I'm just saying I'm not hearing it.
You two are kind of agreeing here.
That's okay.
You two are agreeing. You're saying the same thing.
It would have to be.
But the question is, I think you're going to find out that going off-site, Dale, is going to be a problem, because it's going to be, the question is, that's too far. That's this. It doesn't really benefit. And it's going to be really tough to show an association, you know, if a traffic light's 3 or 4 miles down the road.
What do you think about limiting this to the value of off-site improvements?
It can only
be written into legislation? Or
no.
We can do that internally, right?
Yes.
If you did that, would a developer even be interested in it? Because it seems like their major cost would be the on-site cost.
They're trying to I think
they would be, because if we limit it to the value of off-site improvements, where the DLDOT comes in and says we would like you to provide intersection improvements 5 miles away or something, where we can't directly tie that into the bond or the development, if we limit the amount of the bond to the value of that offsite improvements,
but then let them use, but
that
then,
indirectly might help.
The bond amount would be limited to the value of the offsite, but could they use the bond proceeds for the infrastructure within the development, or would they have to use it only for the offsite?
I'm thinking as a possibility that they could use it for the infrastructure within the development, but the bond amount would be limited to the offsite improvement. So in effect,
yeah, that's indirectly the cost of the development.
That's going to turn into a workshop.
Yeah, on-site,
it's too complicated.
On-site improvements, allowing them to use the bonds for on-site improvements is delaying the cost to the people that are buying in there, and you know, making the houses a few thousand dollars cheaper. But then you're going to pay it each year when you get your tax bill from the county,
cheaper.
And that's not good. I mean,
Dale, when they have it, when they develop a lot, they know what the market will bear. Whatever they're costing it, they either got a lot of margin in there for profit, or they have a smaller margin of profit, depending on their cost. Well, this is going to be another cost, so you'll not see the lot become any cheaper. I look at this bill; it's so thick,
yeah.
It seems so complicated. We don't need it. Things have been going fine. I think there's better ways for us to tackle financing offsite infrastructure, and not through something complicated like this.
All you're asking for is just enabling legislation.
Yes.
And we write our own rules that are, after we get the permission to do it.
Yes.
To create TIFs or STDs.
Why don't we get to look through this first?
I don't even want to do it.
We have some other issues we were going to bring back. We wanted to bring up today and come back on January 8th. So if you would like to.
Okay.
February
8th. Wait until the next meeting, and then
that's
we can.
Fine.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, it's too awkward.
Next.
Okay.
This is for you.
Okay, there were some other legislative issues that Mr. Godwin and I would like to talk about. We expect some... We expect some possible action on these issues in the January session. The first is one that we talked about before, possible overlay zones for planning and zoning. It's my understanding that Newcastle and Kent County are supporting this bill, which would provide the counties the authority to establish overlay zoning zones. For new overlay zones, so that is the this is the bill. I think Mr. Griffin, this is the one Mr. Griffin worked on before. Another one pertains to
this. Yes. Just allows us to do it. Doesn't say we have to do it. Is that correct?
Yes.
Does this provide constructive notice for all property owners affected?
Let's see.
It does not. Because this creates the possibility that you could use and create overlay districts. If you decide to use this, depending on how you decided to use that, notice would be up to you where required.
I almost think that putting the safeguard in there, if we're going to support this, we should have at the very least asked that the safeguard to the public and the property owner be placed in the legislation to require the governing entity to notify all property owners, and not just a little blurb in the back of the News Journal, but...
You may not have to do that.
Well, I'm not so sure if we have to or we don't. I'm talking about fairness.
But in the decision of the Chancery Court, they're saying that if you didn't have this legislation allowing you to create these overlay zones, you could potentially have to notify every property owner. That was a portion of Chancellor Chandler's decision. So he was pointing out the net effect of trying to create one if you didn't have legislative authority to create one. This would protect the county against a claim that you have created one without legislative authority, such as through an RPC or a conditional use in a future court case. Doesn't mean you would have to create overlay zones, but it would mean that you would have a defense if someone claimed that you had invalidly created one.
And we've used them in the past. We have them today.
You have.
Right.
Yes.
I mean, we have. It's not like we won't use them in the future. So
they're an effective planning tool.
Yeah.
And well, essentially, this is coming about because of the decision.
Because most of our notification now, though, is by policy only, right? Correct? I mean, that we do when we do rezonings and conditional uses.
The court decision didn't require notice to every property owner. It said that without state authority to create them, you might have to do that.
Well, I don't see a problem with that, because when you're creating an overlay zone that effectively changes the use of property, carte blanche, I think it's in the interest of fairness to the public and the property owners. They should be individually notified so that they can have a say in what's going to become of their property's zone.
Well, that's asking the state legislature to tell you how to carry out the nuts and bolts procedure of establishing an overlay district. What the state legislature is doing is just saying you have the ability to create one, but I don't think the other two counties would go along with asking to have included in this legislation specific directions such as notice to all property owners, because the counties may decide to do it differently between the three counties.
Well, we can do that locally.
That's where you do it.
Again, that I'm saying I don't want to encourage this. It gives the opportunity for a governing entity to change zones of property without notification. It's that simple.
And the idea of an overlay is that you're not changing the zone. You're leaving the underlying zone the same. But within that zone, you're creating the possibility of a floating area such as an overlay.
Understood, which effectively changes use.
But we don't know what type of notice needs to be given until you have this authority in place and then decide how you're going to use it.
This body here is generally a fair and equitable body. But when we start supporting legislation that's going to go far beyond this body's existence, I become concerned. Is there still anything in the courts, or has all the adjudication of this issue taken place?
It's all been completed. The state Supreme Court upheld Chancellor Chandler's decision striking down Kent County's attempt to create an overlay without this type of legislation. And even if this legislation passes, it doesn't obligate the county to use it. It just creates the possibility that you could use the overlay zone as a planning tool.
Could some of the others, councilmen, chime in? Because Dale and I chimed in, and we heard some conversation on the other one. So, in other words, let's try to see if we can get some kind of consensus.
I was just reading through it, and it says purposes chapters, change in zone, rezoning, or zoning changes does not, I have to agree that with Mr. Phillips that if we're going to do anything, that we certainly, I mean, we do it by policy now, but one of these days we're going to be challenged, I guess.
Well, we can create an ordinance by itself, but that notification on all this stuff. That would be set over and above this.
If an overlay zone is going to be created, then these people have to be notified.
Well, I agree with that.
Well, we just have to adopt an ordinance about notification.
But
the notification
there's a different sections of the state code that talk about notice that are not impacted by this bill.
That'd be something separate and different. I'm saying. I'm saying we need to. If that's your feeling, we should be doing that on everything, Mr. Jones, not just this one issue.
I will argue.
So what we ought to do is get them to draw up a notification, take it out of being policy, and say here how people will be notified in these instances, whether it's a change of zone, a conditional use, and on and on and on, and even the overlay zone. So why don't we just, like I say, I have no fear with what we're looking at here today. Notification is a problem. Let's deal with notification when we get back and get up a new bill. That's something we can do in-house. We don't have to worry about the state of Delaware doing it. But we need a tool, an overlay tool. We've used it.
It's not asking the state too much to provide constructive notice through the notification process.
We're the ones that have to pay for it.
Well, that's fine.
I don't want them to tell me what we got to do, so we have to pay for it. I think we ought to be in the driver's seat on notification.
I'm not interested in encouraging the state to strip property owners of their rights. And without the notification clause in this legislation, you offer governments the opportunity to do just that.
Don't disagree.
You're right.
I mean, notifications to a property owner is just a right. I mean,
but I don't think anybody's not debating that, but I think where do we do it? Do we do it in-house or do we put it with the state law? I mean,
they need to be linked. If we're going to tell the state what to do with respect to this, then we ought to link it with notification. That's not asking too much. Why would the state be afraid of notification to property owners?
They're not going to be afraid because we're going to pay for it.
Think of it.
Well, then maybe that's fair. If we're going to create overlay zones, that's going to affect
I didn't disagree with you. I'm saying we ought to have a notification ordinance, and that's what we ought to adopt.
And the two need to be linked.
Adopted ordinance of notification, it links everything that we do. Vance, we don't do it individually.
There is a provision in here. I mean,
that's what I asked from the get-go.
And it's not the provision you're talking about, but the purpose of this is not to specifically direct you how to carry out your job, but to give you the ability to even think about creating an overlay.
I don't want to give any government the ability to strip property owners of their rights.
If you let me finish, I don't agree that it does. It says the county government, if this bill's enacted, says the county government shall provide for the manner in which these regulations shall be enforced. So that's telling you that if you decide to create an overlay zone, you decide what form of notice is appropriate depending on what you're thinking about doing. It may not be the same in every case, but.
And I'm saying based on principle, what is the harm in linking notification to this ability?
It's not necessary.
It's
not necessary. No, it's not necessary.
It's not necessary to notify a property owner that their property is going to be affected by a government action?
No.
Okay.
No, not the way this reads. No, you're twisting it around.
No, I'm not.
But there's not really a harm of linking the two together. It's not a big deal.
Right, but there's no need to.
Depends on how broadly you're talking about notice. If you're creating an overlay, zone of 50 acres... Are you talking about notifying everybody within the 50 acres or everybody within the county?
I'd say what's affected.
Everybody that's affected.
Affected, what you do.
But this is a 3-county effort, and they're trying to write it in a way that just gives you the authority but doesn't tell you how to do it.
And then we do it, then we set it up here.
And then you can make the notice requirements as restrictive as you want if you decide to do this.
If you take Section 3, isn't that the part? Section 3, isn't that the section that puts Bill Sussex into this? Because this bill was originally built for Kent County and Newcastle.
Yeah, correct? It's only that part dealing with Section 69, starting with 6902.
03.
Mr. Godwin, I'd like to make a comment. Name, please.
Mr. President, members of council, you already do notice all of your property owners Hal Godwin. You already do notice all of your residents in an overlay zone when it comes before a subdivision approval for yourselves. In other words, we're talking about apples and oranges, two different fruits here. The fear of people not being noticed, it lies completely with us. It doesn't rely with state legislation. This state legislation only empowers us to continue to use overlay zones in our subdivision processes. In those processes, we always notify the landowners. Usually, the overlay zone is being laid over a piece of property that's under contract to be developed by a developer, and you're deciding whether or not to allow them to use this overlay zone, such as an RPC.
I think this goes much broader than that, Mr. Powell.
This is the state legislation that you need in order to be able to use those legally. Zoning tools legally. Without this,
I'm saying that this can go much broader than an individual application. This, in fact, in the case of Kent County, takes a huge swath of that county and creates a special overlay zone that grossly limits property owners the use of their property.
The coastal zone.
We're talking about Sussex County, sir.
Sir, we're talking about state legislation, and we're going. And I don't appreciate your tone, sir. I think I've made my point very clear. This gives government the opportunity
to infringe on people's property rights without notification.
No, sir, it does not.
Of course it does. Unless you link the two, any government can create legislation that could create an overlay zone that strips property owners of valuable rights without notification. Now, granted, they have the right to put that notification in, but I don't want to be a party to giving anybody, whether it's this government or another government, that right. Now, why don't you sit down, please?
Yes, sir.
Mr. Phelps, I don't think Mr. Godwin came up to be rude. I think he came up to try to...
I think he came up to try to twist the truth.
No, I disagree with you.
I think he's agreeing with the attorney, and I think he's agreeing maybe with the administrator and a number of other people, Mr.
I don't think anybody's disagreeing with what you're saying. I think they're saying that this would give us enabling legislation, and we would do it ourselves.
Right.
I mean, everybody agrees that everybody in the overlay zone should be notified. It's just how it's to be done, as I see it.
And 5 years from now, when we're not here,
still means
there's
the same thing.
There's going to be a legal right which could give a new government the ability to create overlay zones without notification. It's a very fundamental right.
And
a property
deal,
owner
they can
be notified.
Those
well, we already do that because
environmentally
sensitive district is an overlay district.
Understood.
And we do notify people.
Understood. And the court has said we shouldn't have done that.
No, what the court is saying is that you can't create in the future anything that looks like an overlay without getting this corrective legislation because it's not allowed under state law.
And all I'm saying is that if we want to do that, if we're going to support state legislation that gives governments, any government, that ability, what is wrong with providing notification in this effort?
It's sort of the reverse of the argument that I've heard members of council make in the past, that they don't want the state telling them how to do their part of the job.
Right.
Mr. President, why don't we get a consensus?
I think we understand the argument, Mr. President. Why don't we just have a consensus and move on? We'll just beat this one around.
Mr. Abbott, Mr. Lank, Mr. Griffin, before January 8th, Mr. Godwin, and try to come up with some options. How could we structure the notification?
May not be
part?
A need to do that. Maybe just Mr. Phillips.
But give you some options so that we can, come up with some ideas how to address the issue.
It may not be an issue.
It would have to be a three-county consensus if we're going to ask for state legislation.
But maybe there's
another way with a county ordinance or something
David,
that we could do.
Before we go too much further, there may not be an issue. I understand what Mr. Griffin said. I understood what Mr. Godwin implied, and I can read this myself, and I know what's going on, and I think it's an extreme position he's taking on this property rights issue. He wants to, waive that property right. I'm the king of property rights. This has not got anything to do with it. We will still deal with it here in-house, like Dale just said. We got control of it. The legislation says it. We just need this as a tool. It's corrective legislation. But if we got to get bogged down again with trying to get all three counties together on this, I mean, we're not going to get anywhere. And we got to. It's just something. It's just some housekeeping, guys. It's just don't throw too much into this.
All right, gentlemen, we need to move this. We're killing entirely too much time. Okay. Make a motion. Let's decide if you want to do it. You don't want to do it.
I got a consensus. We move
let
forward
them come
with
back
it.
The option.
Okay.
Let Dave come back. Yeah. I mean, just give us some options, and then we'll go from there. We'll
make Mr. Baker, come back with some options.
Okay.
We're not going to do anything legislation up there anyway in January.
Okay. The next one, subdivision road, just for your information, again, we'll be back to you in January. It's probably likely that some sort of a bill regarding subdivision road requirements will be introduced this coming session that would require roads and subdivisions to be built to state standards versus county standards. These are two older bills that there is interest in, and one would require counties to have all roads or streets and subdivisions of 35 or more lots to be built to state standards instead of county, and then the other is pretty much any road within any subdivision or new development would be built to state standards. So those are two I've talked to Mr. Tom Baker and Mr. Izzo, and we would like to get back to you with some more information on that, because there's the county has money set aside in its budget to revise the county standards. However, we think that this one of these, some form of one of these bills will probably be coming forth in January. So,
isn't the problem, does Newcastle requires they use state standards now?
I believe they do. The Newcastle, and, I think.
You know, we read in the paper a few weeks ago about the fiasco they've got up there with one, where they only require what percentage of to be the roads to be bonded in Newcastle County.
It's insufficient to finish the
very
roads.
Insufficient, and they don't have the money to do it. The subdivision's done and they're gone. The roads are in a horrible shape. Where in the county we require 125% of the construction. So, you know, don't
we
need to be
a
rocket.
We would still do that, Dale. We'd still do that, right?
I know, but I'm saying, Mr. Cole, we're so far ahead of, we're requiring 125%, where Newcastle County requires, I think, 30 or 50. It's a small amount.
Right.
And then the developer gets done, he walks away, there's not enough money left to do the roads.
Right.
They collect the bond, but they don't.
Now, we're doing a good job in here, but I mean, the mechanism we have, I just think that we do see, and I've seen many of these little subdivisions have their roads deteriorate much faster if they were built to a higher standard. So all this does is say that everything should be built to the higher standard.
I think that this part of the legislation, this legislation is coming because the people that are living in these subdivisions go to the state legislators, want them to use their slush money to rebuild the roads, and they're tired of doing it. And they're running out of money, and they can't say no. You know, that's part of the problem.
Yes,
I mean, you know, and most of these places have homeowners that do collect homeowners associations, and we do have suburban street money that is a mechanism in place. So I don't, you know, I think it's just another way for the state to get out dealing with, you know.
Well, no,
because if they don't dedicate the road, it doesn't make any difference.
Well, I hear from many communities that they go to their legislators and say, we'd like to get our roads dedicated to
right.
the state.
But they have
and
to
then
upgrade.
The legislator says, well, they're not to our standards. You'd have to upgrade them first, then we would take them. What this legislation would do is say everybody would have that option because they'd be put in at that standard. And I don't think the state should actually be
involved
maintaining
because then they don't
private
have
roads because they don't have enough money to do
state
the main
road,
road.
They don't have to plow the roads. I mean, it relieves
and
the subdivision.
I don't think the state crews should be in there patching potholes in private subdivisions.
They would
either, but they would only if they get dedicated. But if they're built to state specifications, doesn't mean they're going to be automatically dedicated to the state.
It's hard to deny it when they're not.
Well, that's true, but they have to make the request. But then they lose certain rights when they dedicate to them state. Let me ask Jim. If I lived in a private subdivision and our states get our roads get dedicated to the state, then they become public roads.
They
can't put up gated communities?
They would be public streets, yes.
So a gated community would be pretty much illegal on a public road.
Well,
so a lot of subdivisions are still not going to want to give up the right of privacy and different things. So there is that added thing about the keep.
They have
the
that option right now to do either or.
Well, we've had this discussion.
Is that right, Mike? Am I correct with that?
That's a discussion.
I mean,
Baker was just in here about.
Right. I mean, they have that right. They're bonded. The roads are done. They turn over to home association.
They don't last very, a lot of them don't last
very long. They're not lasting very long. That's a problem.
They don't last long.
The only difference is the base, if I'm not mistaken.
I think that's one of the misconceptions. I think what Tom and I have suggested is that we take one of our sets of approved plans, go up and sit down with the state guy and say, what in here? Because it's not always just the base material and the pavement thickness. It may be things like pavement width, it may be road rights of ways, it may be the geometry of the turns. There's a lot of other things that you could get involved in if you say, we're going to design this subdivision to meet state specifications. And I'm not so sure that their specifications are set up to in accordance with the mixed uses we're now seeing with subdivisions having multifamily and single family and even commercial involved.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think the state specification. And that's why we were proposing to revise our guidelines to bring it in alignment with the nature of the development that you're now
would it
seeing.
Be easier for us to raise our standards or
well, if
and
just
it still stay
the
way we are.
And thicker pavement, that's easy. I mean, that's
yeah, but that doesn't always do it because there's a lot more to cut. There's that tailwind that comes behind it that they start throwing on, and then we have no say after that point.
what happens. I mean, the state sits down and says, this is what you're going to do. Adios, amigo, and see you later, right?
And part of the problem is 1 year it's a plow field, next year it's a road. It's not had time to settle, even though you put a base on it. It's not been tamped proper. It settles and cracks, and the developer's gone.
Yeah, we need to, because of the nature, it used to be single-family homes. You know, you hired your home builder, you built your home. Didn't necessarily tear up the pavement as much, but right. With the big track housing, you know, national builders,
How long do we keep
a longer effect than what we used to see.
How long do we keep the bond for after they turn it over to once the C coat's put on, everything's
pretty much substantial completion. When the job's done, we release the bond.
We don't have a waiting period of a year or anything.
We've talked about that would be one reasonable change, that there'd be a maintenance bond left in place for a year after the.
Let me just say, Mike.
Well, we've had that discussion.
That proposed road agreement.
But as our county engineer, would you prefer seeing this legislation adopted, or we just upgrade our standards?
Well, probably what I'd like to, again, what I suggest I do is go up and sit down with the state guys and see where are the discrepancies between what we do. If it's just the pavement thickness in the base, then that's not a big deal. But if, again, if it's further reaching, and I expect that it's further reaching.
Okay.
Okay.
I think
one of the problems when you brought the policy up last time that Tom brought up, one of the concerns was the type of development. Is it a campsite? And, you know, and they got a slag road versus that. It was going to affect them people, too. And that's when the red flag went up on that deal. So, go ahead, Mr. President.
Okay. Mr. Baker, anything else?
Yeah, I'm sorry.
So far, you haven't done a very good job,
no,
Dave, but you're on roll.
What
are you sorry for, Dave? We hire you to do this.
This is.
We got 2 weeks rest after this. Yeah. You don't have to put up with us.
This is House Bill 239, which is another one that, just for your information, would authorize the Office of State Planning to deny subdivisions, rezonings, or conditional uses in the absence of existing adequate facilities. And then.
Can I get a consensus to.
Tell us what Todd's saying.
Can we get a consensus to oppose this one?
Send that back.
Yeah. Got to rewrite it. Try it again.
Okay, I think we've heard enough about that. When you've heard the comments,
okay.
The next one,
and then the next one is 244, the TDR bill.
I'm serious about that. Does Mr. Godwin or Mr. Baker have authority to oppose House Bill 239? I've already talked to some legislators, and he said if this gets passed. Our job in county is over. He said, House Bill 239.
The one that we just...
He said, if it gets passed, he said, the zoning and all that's all going to be controlled by the state.
Right.
I hope they pack your lunch.
He's got at least four votes, or four to...
Yeah, I think you know the feeling on that, Mr. Baker. Go ahead.
Okay. 239. Okay. And then the last one is 244. And that is the one that was introduced for regard to establish a TDR program, a statewide TDR program. One of the main concerns with it is there would be a transfer of development from low-density areas to high-density areas, growth areas around town, but it could be used without some sort of limitation that we were talking about as part of our comprehensive plan. Like we have considering an 8-mile limitation in terms of a transfer. I mean, this was pretty wide open where an example could be to transfer development rights from west of Greenwood to outside maybe Millville or Ocean View or Selbyville or, you know, some other area of the county under more development pressure. So that was one of the main concerns. So these were just a few of the... notes that we had about it.
I mean, we are still talking about creating our own TDR program, right?
Yes, the plan, the draft plan includes the suggestion that we create our own, which would give us more control versus a flat-out TDR.
In the density trade ordinances that we have passed, have they suggested that's not, in essence, a TDR and does not accomplish the same objectives?
No, they have not suggested that. I mean,
I would encourage you to point that out to them, which you probably already have, that
we in essence are now creating a process which mirrors the TDR process.
Yes, that's right. And we, in fact, in the plan, it even says that, in the draft plan, it says, it mentions those in the TDR right. section as a version of TDR, you know, the density bonus as a way to accomplish the same thing.
I'm sorry?
In the land use plan, he's talking about that.
In the draft land use plan.
This is something else, Joe. See the first word, the thing there, complicated, complex, and not fully understood. We shouldn't be doing this.
But TDR?
TDRs. There's no need to in this county.
We have a
state's going to cram.
I like what we got in our land use plan.
But we should reject all TDR programs because throughout the country they're being rejected across this nation. They don't work.
How are you?
All right. Well, then we ought to just take a position. We don't want the state to mandate, and we shouldn't even talk about one here locally.
Well, state's going to give you one, whether you want it or not, Mr. Coleman. I do not disagree with you.
They may then, if they give it, maybe they'll give us the ability then, like on some of this other legislation.
If they do, then we'll deal with that one.
Well, they will. We can. We have that.
Develop one. It's just or not develop.
It's in our land use plan.
It's in our land use plan, but the legislation that they tried to get passed last year that didn't accomplish that give us the ability to pass one. I don't know if they have to throw the magic wand over it or not, but,
it's just another way that government's trying to manipulate and micromanage land use, and it never works, and these are always failing.
Okay. We've got enough power to take us out of the whole operation, and I don't think you have a problem with it.
Okay. Next item, Mr. Baker. We got to move this agenda.
Okay. He's trying to sum that up. Did you have something to say, Dave?
Jump in there, Dave.
Consensus
everybody else is
not to support the state TDR program.
Absolutely.
But, okay.
I think you got that.
And then the next item, finally, is building code options. And with us today, we have Mr. Van Milligan and Eddie Parker. Pass this out real quick. We currently use First State Inspection Agency for building code inspections for our single family inspection process. Our contract with First State expires on August 31st, 2008, and in order to terminate the contract, we must give First State a 6-month notice by February 28th of 2008. We have been considering the option of performing the single family home inspections in-house versus contracting it out, which is the way we began the program a few years ago and have done in the past. With a downturn in the economy, we feel we are in a better position today to consider in-house single-family building code inspections. We are proposing that the county council consider this as an option. It would require, we estimate, 4 new employees, 3 inspectors, and a clerk. The county would have additional control regarding timing of inspections. The savings are estimated to be $349,000 over the next 3 years to the county government by doing it in-house based on a conservative number of new homes per year. Kathy Roth prepared this analysis showing the reflected savings, and we feel that if there is an increase in the housing industry when there is an increase in the housing industry again, that some of our assessors could be trained and could help with the inspections, or we could look at, of course, hiring more inspectors if we did it on an in-house basis. If the council was in agreement with this proposal, then we would notify First State as soon as possible so they would have sufficient notice. We would schedule a training program for some of our assessors and eventually new inspectors. So I don't know if Mr. Milligan or Mr. Parker would like to make any comments or have any questions for us.
This morning, Van's not going to get up here. Eddie, you got to give her a shot.
Eddie's brave.
Tell me to sit down. It's lunchtime. I can go. This is just an option that we're laying on the table for the council. We see it as a way to generate some revenue for the council. And There was a time a few years ago when we certainly would not have considered this because of the amount of permits that we were processing. But as you all know, those times have changed somewhat. And
a lot.
If we're going to consider this at some point, we feel this is the opportune time to do it because of the slowdown in the building industry. It would give us the opportunity to get this in-house and up and going rather than wait for things to pick up again and then decide to do it. We have a very well-trained staff currently, and we think that by cross-training some additional county employees that we would be in a good position to take this task on.
Do you think, Eddie, that, I mean, I know the proposal is to do four.
Three inspectors and one clerk.
One clerk, right. I mean, with the slowdown, I mean, I know we're going to, we're saying to cross-train everybody that we need to hire, like, right now, or are you going to, cross-train
in-house?
This will all
become effective with a new budget, the next year's budget.
Okay, so it'd be July next year.
The transition.
Actually, and I know we're limited on.
The existing contract goes through August.
Yes.
First date, so we've got 9 months really to think about it.
Yes.
Well,
no,
but we need to notify them.
Yeah, but I mean, if you do notify them, you've got 9 months to get the people trained.
Yes.
So, did you say you do it with three inspectors?
Three additional to what we currently have.
Oh, okay, I'm sorry. So that'd make a total of how many?
Seven.
Total seven inspectors.
Seven.
And how many does First State have?
Earl's sitting in the audience, so I can ask him.
Okay.
We currently have eight inspectors stationed in Georgetown.
Okay.
But they also do electrical inspections.
Right. Now, I think whatever the number they've got, I have not heard complaints about not getting there on time. I think First State's done a real good job with that.
Oh, absolutely.
But I think the intention was when we started this program that in the future we would take it over sometime, but we didn't feel like it when we started it some years ago that it was that we had the ability to do it. But I sort of think we do now, and I would encourage the council to go ahead with it.
I know I was on the other end, the fire side, when they did all this, and I think some of the opinion was is again that we have if things really got slow, we'd have a, I understand what you're saying, Eddie, about as far as cross-training and stuff like that. But things really got slow, and we're getting more people. What do we do with them, and all that. I think that was a huge concern is why we subbed it out. And at the original point, at least what I can remember, it's been many years ago, to say the least.
And that's why we're suggesting we take a very conservative approach to this and utilize as many in-house as we can so that we're not going out hiring people off the street.
Right.
And put ourselves in that position. Now, as the housing industry recoups and starts back up, we'll have to look at this on an annual basis, and we may decide we have to add some additional staff. But what we're proposing here today certainly, I think, will meet our needs for the next 2 or 3 years. Based on projections.
Is this on for a motion or just discussion today?
I do have a motion. Be it moved that the Sussex County Council approve the provision of single-family home inspections via Sussex County staff effective September 1, 2008.
Am I making that motion?
Yes, I move.
I have a motion, Mr. Rogers, seconded by Mr. Jones. Motion just read by Mr. Baker. Any questions? Being none, Mr. Cole.
I'm going to defer. I'm not too sure. I was an advocate for letting the private sector work with the public sector and as a way to save money, and I'm not 100% sure and comfortable deviating from that because I still think the private sector can do it cheaper and more cost-effective. So I'm just not ready to vote on this.
Mr. Phillips?
Based on the analysis of staff, which shows that we could save taxpayers $350,000, I'll vote yes.
Mr. Rogers?
The downturn in the economy and the staff study, it shows that we basically got assessors starting to have idle hands, and we can utilize them more efficiently with some cross-training, and it's just good business sense, and I vote yes.
Mr. Jones?
I
I got mixed emotions about this because, like I said, I hate to say, George, I have to halfway agree with you. Ugh, that almost makes me sick.
Don't go to that extreme.
I won't. Don't believe me.
Because I won't feel comfortable with my decision.
It saddens me to even say it, I'll be honest with you. But I know our staff does a great job, man, and any of you guys, and I know you could do the job, but I'm going to have to say I'm not comfortable voting on it either. That's all. I guess abstain would be a good word. Or was that what we used, George?
I just said I'm not voting.
You're not voting?
Okay. Now, if I abstain or vote no, does that mean we do away with the building code?
No, we just stay as the way we are.
Oh, okay. Because I didn't support the building code to begin with, so.
That was a good try, Mr.
If you guys want to.
Hell, I don't know if I'd be bragging about that.
I'm not. Let me say that. Earl's sitting here, but I'd say if he wasn't here, I think that First State as a whole has done a very good job. We have had occasionally we have problems, but we've been able to work them out, and I think they've got there on a timely basis, and I have not heard complaints on holding them up because they couldn't get there on time, a time or two, but as many as they do, I still think that that's been a good point with contracting it out. However, I think that from the beginning we were talking about doing it ourselves sometime in the future, and the slowdown has enabled the county, I think, probably to take it on, and I think it's time for us to look at that, and my vote is yes, motion's carried.
Thank you. Finally, the last item, the administrator's report, which I'll just run through very quickly. First, at DelDOT, Route 1 temporary turning lane closure. Effective tomorrow, left turn lane on Route 1 near Midway Shopping Center will be closed for approximately 6 weeks due to construction. Next, beneficial acceptance. The engineering department has granted beneficial acceptance to two projects, Hawkeye Subdivision Phase 1B, which there's information in the report. Smithfield Agreement 582 is the second one. And there's information included. County government schedule. The county council will not meet on Christmas Day, December 25th, or January 1st, 2008. The next regularly scheduled meeting, the county council will be held on January 8th at 10 a.m. County offices will be closed also on December 24th and the 25th for the Christmas holidays. County offices will also be closed on January 1st, and we wish everyone a happy holiday and Merry Christmas.
Thank you. Mrs. Webb.
Thank you. On a lighter and happier note.
Don't be too sure of yourself.
You're starting off wrong, Ralph. Good go.
Tell you stand up.
For the fifth consecutive year, Sussex County has won the Certificate of Achievement for Excellence in Financial Reporting for its comprehensive annual financial report for fiscal year 2006. The award is among the highest forms of recognition for governmental accounting and financial reporting. The Government Finance Officers Association of the United States, based in Chicago, awarded their Certificate of Achievement to the county this summer. The CAFR was judged by an impartial panel to meet the high standards of the association's program. The award is an acknowledgment of Sussex County's Comprehensive Annual Financial Report, or CAFR. The document includes the county's annual audit. It also contains information about county demographics and the local economy. That information helps those reviewing the report, such as investors, to better gauge the county's financial condition. And today I'd like to recognize those county employees who helped make this achievement possible. Without them, it wouldn't be possible. It's truly a group effort and everyone works together. I have something for them. They're here in the audience. Mr. David Baker.
Have everybody come up. Thank you, Sue. Thank you.
Give her a hard time. Ms. Gina Jennings.
Chip, did you bring your camera today?
Yeah. Mr. Keith Moore.
Yeah.
Good for you.
Yeah.
Hold them up. Oh, that's right.
Another one.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Kathy Roth, our budget cost director.
He's quiet.
We're in the middle of preparing our financial statements right now this week. And Mr. Bill Townsend. So they're all working
really
hard again on
smile.
2007.
Why don't they all come up and Chip will take a picture?
Yeah.
Come on back up.
Definitely.
Did they leave? Nobody left yet? Okay.
And Mr. Jeff James, who I don't know if you've noticed lately, he's on crutches in the
end. Where is he?
Didn't want to make the trek down. Yeah.
Are you going to get out there with Mr. Baker? Susie, I wonder how these people are selected. I mean, I signed all their checks. I didn't get anything.
You still have a couple of weeks if you come in this week and work real hard for us.
You can still pull it. You can pull it off at the end, right?
I'm gonna trust Santa Claus knows.
Not good. That didn't make a motion.
Come on, guys, smile. Keith, watch your hands. Hey, Keith.
Oh,
Keith.
Yes.
What's Doris Lodger here for?
Huh?
What's Doris Lodger here for?
Huh? Money, you guys hand out.
That was easy.
Well, you never know when someone's eyes will be closed.
I wonder if there's a TIF
for that.
I don't know. I want to thank all of you for this prestigious award, and I can tell you as a councilman, it's nice to be able to know that we have employees that can tell you exactly where the money is and it's being handled properly and so forth. So you do a great job, and we appreciate it.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. And they're working on the next CAFR award this week. They're trying to wrap it up. So.
Lunchtime, right?
We do have a larger plaque that's kept down in finance that's to the county that's from the association if you're cruising the halls.
South Coastal? Friend of the MOU? Who's that?
Me.
Go.
As you know, we have been planning the South Coastal Library expansion. The Friends of the South Coastal Library have generously pledged $2 million for this project. This has had a big impact on our budget and the library expansion project. Today I have the agreement between the Friends and the county. This memorandum of understanding explains how the capital contributions will be collected by the Friends group. The original budget for this project was $6.5 million, with the Friends contributing 25% of these costs and 50% of the cost to oversize their cultural center. However, the bid for the construction came in lower than the engineer's estimate, so these savings will help the county and the Friends group. The agreement is simple, I'm going to pass it down, and states that the Friends of the South Coastal Library will contribute 25% of the actual project costs, 50% of the cost to oversize. It also has a schedule of payments attached. I worked with the Friends group to come up with a payment schedule that would match their contributions already received and future funding efforts and pledges. The schedule details the payments to be made to Sussex County. We will be receiving a payment every 2 months. Ms. Carol Fitzgerald's here today, our county librarian, and she'd like to talk about the contributions the Friends have made in this effort. This agreement has been approved by the Friends Board. Carol?
Good morning. The Friends have a long history of supporting the South Coastal Library. They were responsible for the existing building as it now stands, and in the intervening years, they have continued to raise substantial amounts of funds to help supplement the county's budget and provide extras that the county does not budget for. They certainly recognized a couple of years ago that the building had outgrown the community and we needed to expand, and have since embarked on a huge fundraising effort to add to that, and they have been extremely successful in their fundraising. They have an annual beach to Bay Cottage Tour, and they started an annual harvest ball where they have raised quite a bit of money. So they are doing very well. In addition, they receive substantial funds from individuals throughout the community and businesses. And of course, the Freeman Foundation has given a considerable amount. So they've done very well, and they're very anxious for this to proceed. So thank you.
You're welcome. They were very cooperative to work with. We've worked well together. And
any questions on the MOU? You got a motion?
Yes. Be it moved that the Sussex County Council accept the Memorandum of Understanding between Sussex County and the Friends of the South Coastal Library as presented.
So moved.
I have a motion, Mr. Jones, seconded by
yes.
Mr. Cole, to adopt the MOU with the Friends of South Coastal. Mr. Cole?
Yes.
Mr. Phillips?
Yes.
Anybody not here?
Nope.
Mr. Rogers, not here. Mr. Jones?
Yes.
Yes, motion is carried. Thank you. 1020, an ordinance authorizing the issue of 73,000 general obligation bonds to Act for Frankfurt Surta. Mr. Griffin.
This is a public hearing on an ordinance to authorize the issuance of certain bonds by the county. We'll begin the public hearing with a presentation by Susan Webb, the finance director, and after that, and any questions that members of council may have regarding the proposal, we'll open it up to public comment if anyone is here who would like to be heard regarding this bond issue. Ms. Webb.
Thank you. This ordinance is to authorize the issuance of up to $73,000 of general obligation bonds of Sussex County to help finance the Dagsboro-Frankfort-Delaware Avenue extended sewer project. The bonds are backed by the county's full faith and credit, and it is expected that the debt service on these bonds will be paid from revenues of the Dagsboro-Frankfort Sewer District. It is anticipated that the bonds will be sold to USDA. The term is 4.5% or the lesser rate at closing for 40 years. The bond issuance is within the legal debt of the county. This is a very small project with only 12 EDUs and 934 billable front feet. So because of this, it will be part of the Dagsboro-Frankfort Sewer District and will have the same rates as the existing Dagsboro-Frankfort Sewer District as follows per the 2008 budget. The transmission rate at 65 cents, the collection rate at 87 cents, which is a total of $1.52 per front foot. The service charge is at $252.08 as set in the 2008 budget.
Any questions by council?
Nope.
Is there anyone here from the public who would like to be heard regarding a proposed ordinance to issue $73,000 in general obligation bonds for the construction and equipping of the Dagsboro-Frankfort Sanitary Sewer District Delaware Avenue Extension? Again, any member of the public present who would like to be heard regarding this? Let the record show that no one from the public asked to be recognized. We will close the public hearing. What's your pleasure?
Read the title, please.
Okay. Be it moved that Sussex County Council adopt the ordinance to authorize the issuance of up to $73,000 of general obligation bonds of Sussex County for the construction and equipment of the Dagsboro-Frankfort Sanitary Sewer District Delaware Avenue Extension and authorizing all necessary action in connection therewith.
So moved. Second.
Motion, Mr. Cole. Second, Mr. Jones. Just read by Susie Webb. Any questions? Mr. Cole?
Yes.
Mr. Phillips?
Yes.
Mr. Rogers?
Yes.
Mr. Jones?
Yes.
Yes. Motion is carried. 1030 public hearing, source water protection. Mr. Griffin.
This is an ordinance to adopt Chapter 89, which would be a new section of our county code dealing with source water protection. As you know, this ordinance has previously been introduced, and I assume that copies of it are available for members of the public who would be interested.
Yes.
Okay. We'll begin this hearing. Is there to be an explanation?
Could you do that?
Yeah, I'll give a brief explanation. State law requires all three counties to adopt a source water protection ordinance. The idea of the ordinance is to protect groundwater.
and specifically to protect wellhead areas and to protect areas that are designated as excellent recharge areas. This ordinance would apply to primarily to future applications for wells and water facilities using groundwater as opposed to existing, which are grandfathered under the ordinance. We will open the floor now to public hearing by any member of the public. I realize that there was a committee appointed by County Council who worked diligently on this matter for a long number of months. The committee came to Council roughly a month to 6 weeks ago with a proposed ordinance, and that ordinance was introduced by Council as its proposed ordinance. And there are some members of the committee here who may wish to be heard as members of the public, and they will be allowed that privilege today. If there's anyone else from the public who would like to be heard, who has questions about this or concerns, you are welcome to speak. When we call for public participation, if you would like to be heard, simply raise your hand, and then in turn, everybody will be given a right to speak. If you do speak, when you come to the podium, please begin by giving us your name and address so that we could later determine who's making what comments. We will open the matter. Are there any questions by members of council? Okay. We'll open the matter to public comment. Is there anyone here today who would like to be heard concerning this proposed ordinance? Ms. Granke? Mrs. Granke was a member of the committee appointed by council who worked on the proposed ordinance.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Morning.
My name is Mabel Granke. I was a member of the committee, and I come before you also as a very concerned citizen who has monitored this situation since 2003. And I come to you with a minority report because I am very concerned about the draft ordinance before you, because I believe it is deficient in actually protecting our public wellheads and our excellent recharge areas. And the reason for that is threefold. Number one, the majority of the committee increased the ability for impervious surface from 20% to 35%. And they decreased the safe area recommended from 150 to 100 for your major public wells, and for your smaller producing wells to 20 feet. And I believe that there is sufficient scientific expertise available that indicates that both of these are excessive in terms of actually protecting our very precious water supply in terms of being safe. And that was always the issue, that our water, there was never any question about water supply. The question was that we protect it and keep it safe for our citizens, and very particularly for those public wellheads that are in the coastal area also. We must always be aware of the danger of saltwater intrusion. And so it becomes even more critical for those wells that are situated along the coast. Many of the towns do have their wells outside their boundaries. And so it is exceedingly important to our towns as well that we have the proper protection. My third concern was the fact that instead of following the actual purpose of the ordinance, which I will read to you, this ordinance is to ensure that land use activities are conducted in such a way as to minimize the impact on and reduce the risk of contamination to excellent groundwater recharge areas and wellhead protection areas, which are the source for public drinking water throughout the county. And what the majority committee did was put the burden on DENREC in terms of permitting whatever. in terms of either the public wellhead areas or the excellent recharge areas. And this does not go to the heart of the fact that you make your judgments with regard to, is it good land use in relationship to the facility you are trying to protect or the land you are trying to protect. So those are my three major concerns. There are other things, and I do have a paper that I will return in to you today. Then I wanted to share with you, because there is a current application which very definitely points up the matter of the kind of protection that's needed. And it is in a PLUS report of March 15, 2006, to the county with regard, as I said, to a current application. And what they're saying is this: the DENREC water supply section has determined that the parcel falls wholly within an excellent groundwater recharge area. And they attached a map, because there are very definite maps indicating and designating the public wellheads that need protection and the excellent recharge area. The excellent groundwater recharge areas are those areas mapped by the Delaware Geological Survey, where the first 20 feet of subsurface soils and geologic materials are exceptionally sandy. As such, these soils are able to transmit water very quickly from the land surface to the water table. Consequently, groundwater in these areas may very quickly be adversely affected by land use activities or impervious cover. The DENREC water supply section recommends that the portion of the new development within the excellent groundwater recharge area not exceed 20% impervious cover. Some allowance for augmenting groundwater recharge should be considered if the impervious cover exceeds 20% but is less than 50% of that portion of the parcel within the area. However, the development should not exceed 50% regardless. And I would like to interject here, and I'm sure you all are familiar with the Cadbury development. That Cadbury development was totally within the excellent recharge area. And to their credit, because they wanted to develop to the 50% impervious surface, they installed an augmentation system and totally got all of the density that they were asking for on their site, but did the right thing with regard to protecting our groundwater. A water balance calculation will be necessary to determine the quantity of clean water to be recharged via a recharge basin. The purpose of an impervious cover threshold is to minimize loss of recharge and associated increases in stormwater and protect the quality and quantity of water recharging the aquifer. In addition, because the excellent groundwater recharge area can so quickly affect the underlying aquifer if contaminants are spilled or discharged across the area, the storage of hazardous substances or waste should not be allowed within the area unless specific approval is obtained from the relevant state, federal, or local program. And I'm going to give this to you because I think it is so important and goes to the heart of why this ordinance needs some major adjustment. And also, I'm going to share with you, and it is not complimentary, the comment by the Sierra Club. And I won't read that because it will just raise your hackles, but you need to see it and know it. And with that, I ask you, please, unless the county is willing to take over the fiscal responsibility in terms of this expertise that DENREC gives to us on a daily, monthly, annual basis with regard to making decisions that are good for all of the county and for all of us, that we have to listen to their expertise. And I tried to, and I believe that we must do this. And please look at this ordinance from that standpoint. Thank you.
Ms. Granke, a question. You were on the committee.
Yes.
And I remember the first day over a year ago when DENREC came here and presented what they desired to do. Your committee met a number of times. We had a consultant that stayed with you a brief period. And then DENRAC basically came back a couple weeks ago with the same presentation they made the first time of the year, back to where they were.
Which is in the Best Management Practices Manual, yes.
But with your, you know, I feel that on the committee, it spent a lot of time on this issue, and they've had some concerns with DENRAC's desires. Your opinion, you said you were here as a minority report, and I want to hear from, I hope, some other committee members.
Well, I'm sure that, you will.
That, you know, where does this fall? Like, they made some adjustments to it. With the way I read their report, they had a lot of concerns. Like, one of the municipalities that I represent, Lewis, their well is outside the town limits. And what happens if their well fails or they want to put a new one and they don't have that 150 feet to do what they got to do, and they feel they're still in a safe area? I mean, you know, the road breaks down, they can fix it, but and there's, I think there's a clause that says they can repair or update what they need to do. But if they have a new well needed, where does that put them if this boundary stays so the larger circle?
Well, I think the city of Lewis would have to look for a site that would provide the amount of water that's needed to be produced for the city, and take into account how that site, where it sits, and have to hope that the development around it is not such that it would incur the kind of dangers that needs to be protected from. And right now, I'm hoping the city of Lewis is going to ask the Cape Henlopen School Board for the site plan for the new high school, because when you start moving dirt around, you are changing the contours of the land, and you're changing the drainage pattern, and that really does need to be looked at in relationship to the Lewis wells. And I think that's what we need to be aware of, is in case a point for the city of Rehoboth, they have a major producing well on Warrington Road that sits between 24 and Old Landing. And that site at the corner of Route 24 is very much a part of the expansion of that area with regard to medical facilities. And fortunately, when that site plan came up for approval, one of the engineers that services Rehoboth looked at it and saw that it was being done in such a way that the wellhead was properly protected. So you see, if when a site is going to be developed, it needs to be looked at not only from the standpoint of how you protect wetlands, where you're going to put your roads, but you need to think, particularly if there's a public wellhead, that is either abutting or close by, you need to look at that site from the standpoint of how the site can be developed in order to properly also protect the public wellhead. And I appeal to you in the matter of practically every piece of legislation that's presented, either by the state or by this county, includes the phrase in its whereases that you're going to protect and be concerned for the public health and welfare. And having safe drinking water is part and parcel of our public health and welfare.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Anyone else present who would like to be heard?
Schneidley.
Gentleman right here.
Board of Public Works.
Thank you.
I'd like to address the council. My name is Gary Stabley. I live at 13 Harborview Road, Lewis, Delaware. I'm currently the president of the Lewis Board of Public Works. I come to you as one as a resident of the county and other as an elected official in the city of Lewis to ask you to give due consideration to this ordinance, because our well, our well field in the recharge area is of a significant value to the city of Lewis. There's a lot of construction, as you know, in that area, and we residents of Lewis depend on that water source. It's not today, you can tell by the color of my hair, that I'm not a young person anymore. I'm a grandfather and a great-grandfather, And I appeal to you on the sense of, for future generations, that you look at this ordinance with all due consideration, because it's not what you're doing today. It's what you're going to do to future generations. And it's a very important, and no rush to get this thing through. Question in my mind, and I haven't had a chance to really read the ordinance, or nor do the other board members have had a chance to hear, to analyze this ordinance. But the question is, in my mind, since there have been standards set for with wellhead protection, why is it that you reduce that amount? Do you have better data available than what is available to us to make that analysis?
There is no standards.
Well, according to Denrec, there are standards. Otherwise, they have, you know, I'm just asking you to take a good, strong look. It's not what you're doing now. It's what's going to, you're going to impact the future. And as you know, the high school, you heard that. You have the
Schofield
is part of a chart, the recharger. You look at the map. Right. And I just appeal to you to take your time and look at it. Make sure, and we'd like to have a chance to give you a written response to this ordinance. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Daly.
Anybody else?
Gilbert?
We'll pass them down.
Doug Rambo, Delaware Department of Natural Resources and Environmental Control, Division of Water Resources. I have Kevin Donnelly's letter to the county with respect to this version of the ordinance. I'd like to read it into record, please. Dear Mr. Godwin, thank you for providing my staff and me the opportunity to comment on the Sussex County Source Water Protection Ordinance that will be before council on December 18th. Despite the many hours spent by my staff in assisting the county and my personal efforts to provide concrete advice as to how to proceed, how the proposed ordinance could be improved so as to be protective of all Sussex Countyans, I cannot support the ordinance as introduced because it is not protective of the drinking water resources of the county. Unfortunately, what is currently under consideration by the council does not meet the express purpose of the ordinance, which as Mrs. Granke said earlier, which is to ensure that land use activities are conducted in such a way as to minimize the impact on and reduce the risk of contamination to excellent groundwater recharge areas and wellhead protection areas, which are the source for public drinking water throughout the county. The proposed ordinance simply falls short of the protections needed for protecting public drinking water wellhead protection areas. The county does not go far enough with land use controls inside of wellhead protection areas. The ordinance's safe zone protections are ill-advised considering the long-term dependency of the county on groundwater. For example, by our calculation, the proposed ordinance protects only 1% or 3.6 acres of the land surrounding Lewis 5 wells that are each capable of pumping 50,000 gallons per day to the Lewis residents and visitors. These wells are situated in the shallow unconfined aquifer, and the county's proposed 100 diameter safe zone around these public water supply wells is unprotective. At the County Council's November 27 meeting, the Division of Water Resources explained to Council how this could be remedied. The ordinance should augment currently proposed wellhead protection area safe zone restrictions with the protections that are afforded the excellent groundwater recharge areas from the edge of the safe zone to the perimeter of the mapped wellhead protection area. By incorporating the recharge provisions in wellhead protection areas, the county would ensure that the rain that falls in mapped wellhead protection areas would be captured in an area that positively impacts the well. The county, to its credit, through this ordinance, adopts the full mapped areas of wellhead protection areas. As you are aware, the department has made it quite clear that source water protection is one of its key criteria for the evaluation and certification of comprehensive land use plans. The department's comments provided to the county during the November 28 preliminary land use service meeting with respect to the 2007 update of its comprehensive plan should make it evident that in its current form, the ordinance will not pass the certification process. Again, I offer the county the support and assistance of my staff. would appreciate the continued opportunity to help modify the current ordinance so that it is in compliance with Delaware law. Thank you for the opportunity to comment, and please feel free to contact John Barton, Doug Rambo, in the Source Water Assessment and Protection Program at 302-739-9945 if you should have any questions regarding the comments in this letter. Sincerely, Kevin Donnelly.
Thank you.
Any questions?
Anyone have any questions?
No. I don't.
Apparently not. Okay. Mr. Kramer.
He's going to Castle County. He might already be there.
My name is Dan Kramer. 8041 Scott Silver Road, Greenwood. Now, I am not here, even though I was on the committee. I'm not here representing the committee in any form. This is my personal opinion. I am not representing the committee at all. Now, on page 5, well, I actually go to page 4, and look under 89-6, B2. In there, it has, in the radius of the 100 feet, it says, without county council and planning and zoning approval, right? Then go over to page 5, under D1. I think there was a word left out of there. Should it not have said without?
Where is that, Mr. Kramer?
On D, page 5, under D1. Over here on page 1, page 4, you have it without county approval, council approval, right? But then you left out the word, I think the word without should be added.
Okay, well, thank you for that observation. We will check that.
And as far as this protecting water, I think it does a very well job. First of all, show me in the Delaware Code that the legislators passed, not anybody else, legislators passed the Delaware Code. Where do you find in there anything concerning the fact of what DENREC wants to bring down the pike? And even DENREC's own codes does not bring in those questions, because it already says a public water well within the housing development subdivision, strip development, shall be 150 feet inside the outermost lines. And as far as a lot of the other stuff, there is nothing in there that we didn't. Why should we, why should the committee even put anything beyond what was required? In fact, if you go to the page. Let's see if I can find that right off. Yeah, page 4. There again, 89-6B2. It says something about, or B1 rather, 5-year time of travel moving through to the aquifer to the well. Well, first of all, nobody else in the state that put these things into effect. Theirs is a 60-day maximum time of travel, and furthermore, you can't even find that in state law, not even a requirement. So why are we putting it in there 5 years? The question, and originally, when they came out here and all, we were supposed to not had anything to do with 5 years, wasn't even supposed to be built in. We were supposed to go from this point to that point, 5-year travel time, which could have been way out there, and we would have had to bought all the land in order to have developed anything. Till one day, finally, one of the committee members decided to do some research. And they came up with the fact that, oh no, it wasn't required. And come to find out, in the 5-year time of travel, there is buildings in there. Then we were told, oh, we didn't tell you you couldn't build in it. But they sure as shoot did imply it all along. And as far as I'm concerned, if Lewis doesn't like this issue, now they want time to go back and want to write now a letter on this here? Bull cookies. They've had as much ample time to have this thing. This thing was introduced a while back. They could have read it. They could have come forward and put their spiel out there. As far as I'm concerned, let them eat it. If they need a well, let them buy the land and let them come up with the water, because this ordinance is not affecting them in any form if they got to replace their well, because they can replace the well right where it's at, because they're grandfathered in. As far as I'm concerned, pass it like it is, with the exception of putting that one word in there, and take out maybe the five-year time, or clarify that five-year time. Make sure that Denrec can't say, well, you can't build in it. And as far as the 20 feet is concerned, hey, that thing ought to be there, because if you don't put the 20 feet in there, somebody owns 1 acre of land will never be able to build nothing, commercial-wise, period. Because they can't, you couldn't put a septic tank and a building on 1 acre. If you had to leave 100 foot, couldn't be done. Well.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Next, anyone else present who would like to be heard regarding this proposed ordinance?
I have no idea.
Mr. Naylor.
My name is Drew Naylor. I live in Cool Spring, Delaware, and I was not aware of this issue at all, but in listening to what has just come down, I have to agree with Ms. Cranky in that I would urge you not to rush into anything on this. The drinking water is extremely important, and all I hear this gentleman saying is ram it through and, you know, get the developers to be able to do what they want to do. I disagree. You can certainly fit these things on, even in commercial, if you design properly. I'm just asking, please do consider this very carefully.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Anyone else present who would like to be heard? Yes.
Good morning, gentlemen. Still by 10 minutes. I was on the committee. I, like Mr.
Name.
Your name?
Kevin Burdett, 26177 Deep Branch Road, Milton, Delaware. I was on the committee, much like Mr. Kramer. The comments I make today are my own observations.
Now speak for Mr. Kramer.
Now, I'm not speaking for Mr. Kramer, nor Ms. Cranky, for that matter.
Is somebody going to speak for the committee?
I will advise Mr. Griffin, and I went back and looked at the original draft that we did submit to the council, and the word without was in there, so apparently during the rewrite it had gotten eliminated.
What about the, if you look at page 4, B2.
Yes, sir.
The second sentence says no other facilities / structures, but when you look over to D1, it says no other structures. It doesn't say facility / Was facility / in the draft?
What was the second reference you gave?
D1. It says where it says no other. What word follows other in the draft?
Under my D1 on page 5.
Yes.
For a public water supply well with a capacity of less than 50,000 gallons per day, which draws water from a confined or unconfined aquifer, the following shall apply.
Well, just read the last sentence of D1 is what I was asking about.
No other structures may be located within the safe zone.
So the draft left out facility / which was included in B1.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Apparently it did.
Thanks.
The one thing I would like to bring to the council this morning is that, Mr. Cole, as you have asked in the past, I have been a licensed well driller in the state of Delaware for over 30 years.
I see your license.
Yes, sir, you may. I've been a licensed and a master well driller in the state of Maryland for over 30 years, and I'm licensed in multiple other states. I, per your earlier quote several weeks ago when I listened...
I just said a word today.
No, when I listened on the Internet, I was one of the idiots that was assigned to the committee. Thank you very much. Yes, sir.
Whoops.
Now, with that, you had made a comment, and I didn't think it was very appropriate for a man of your stature to make that. And there were many people on the committee who had knowledge.
If I had said tall, it would have been okay?
If you had said tall and gray hair, fat guy wears a red suit at Christmas, it would have been okay. One thing I would ask you all to consider is that this is a land use ordinance. this is not a well construction ordinance. This is not a saltwater intrusion ordinance. This is a land use ordinance. And it talks about land uses and land uses only. There are multiple ordinances in the state of Delaware that are applied by the appropriate agencies that concern the construction of various items, i.e., the wells. The Department of Natural Resources has a booklet of all the items you must do to construct a well and all the setback requirements that are required to construct a well. This ordinance was not to say how to construct the well, but it was to talk about the land uses that you all wish to imply around the well. We had many discussions throughout the committee meeting that we believe that DENREC does have ordinances that safely protect our waters. We had an extensive conversation on the fact that when DENREC provides an ordinance and a regulation, I should say regulation, not an ordinance, when they provide a regulation, they don't say or stipulate, well, this is only good enough if only 50 people get sick and it's not within a wellhead area. We trust that their regulations are to protect the health and welfare of all of the groundwater all of the time. If my well happens to be located outside of an excellent recharge area, do I expect the regulations of DENREC to allow inferiority in that product? I would certainly hope not. So that is one of the reasons we had a big difference with some of the other county policies that they adopted when we read them. They talked about buried fuel tanks. And when we backed up and took a look, we said, the fuel tank, whether it's in an excellent recharge area, it's in a medium recharge area, or it's in a poor recharge area, should have the same quality of standards that no pollutant comes out of it. Period. Amen. End of story. And the regulations that DENREC has does allow that to happen. So wherever that tank's located, it's not supposed to have pollutions leaving it. Period. Amen. Of story. Again, the purpose, as Ms. Granke stated earlier, and I want to reemphasize, the purpose as written in this ordinance is to minimize and reduce. That's what the state has asked you to do. That's what the Department of Natural Resources read here again today, to minimize and reduce. Unless somebody has added some words someplace, I did not see eliminate anywhere. And I think the ordinance that has been presented to you by the committee does minimize and reduce the risk of things occurring and apply it to a land use application. Cadbury, as referenced earlier, was an example that exists within an excellent recharge area. And I think it's a good design. I think it is foolish for us today, however, to say, we're sorry because you equalized within 50% of build out what was being recharged to that excellent recharge area. We won't allow you to build anymore. With the technologies that we have, with the engineering abilities we have, if I build 100% of the site and am still equaling or exceeding what is there today as far as recharge, doesn't that make more sense? And that's basically what this ordinance allows as far as land use. It says, let's keep the recharge there. It doesn't say you can keep the recharge here, but we're only going to let you build on 50%. That's kind of foolish. If we applied that same thought process to the automobile industry, we would all be driving cars that still only get 6 miles to the gallon. We've made them get better. These land uses will make technology improve. I do not appreciate as well the testimony that was entered here today in written form that was not read into the public record. You have public sitting here today, and I can appreciate that the comments that may raise your hackles, But I don't believe it's fair to the public that's sitting here that that testimony wasn't read so that everybody understood what you all are going to be trying to make your decisions on. And I would ask for you
to... What are you talking about? What testimonies?
There was testimony submitted by the Sierra Club that was not read into record, nor read or provided to the public.
Okay.
Or provided to the public to see, to make comment on. Ergo, you're making a decision based on
information. Well, I haven't read in record. I noticed that, too. I was wondering why it wasn't read. I mean, you know, if you want to beat me up, that's fine. I mean, I don't mind taking...
I don't mind
getting beat up, but I put that on the table. We'll have a written record.
And could you tell me what day that was that I made that reference that the committee was a group of idiots, you said I said?
Mr. Cole, I believe your comment was to one of the other councilmen. Oh, was that one of the idiots that you put on there? And I can certainly go back and look in the, or ask one of your staff to go back and review
not the whole committee. I didn't refer to the whole committee.
No, you wouldn't do that, Mr. Cole.
Was it you?
I don't know that, sir. I was just one of the idiots.
You feel guilty?
No, sir, I don't.
All right. I'm just wondering.
No, sir, I don't.
Okay.
But I guess my, and the reason I'm bringing that to you, Mr. Cole.
Yeah, I was just wondering what.
Was not that, and I didn't want.
What relevance that had other than taking a pot shot at me today? I was sitting here not saying a word.
The relevance that it had, Mr. Cole, is that.
I haven't said a word.
Is that.
Just questioning him now.
To the public sitting here today, and the public that was listening that day, perhaps more importantly, when this, I think it was the day this ordinance was first introduced to you, it made it sound like the people on the committee were just John Q. Public with no knowledge.
Some were.
It made it sound like the people on the committee.
And your background is again.
Excuse me, sir. Let me finish, please. That the entire committee was made up of people who had no knowledge of what was going on in the county in hydrology, in land use, or anything else. And I think that's unfair. And I'll be quite honest with you. I was more impressed once I met with the committee members and had a chance to deal and interact with them that there was a ton of knowledge that was present there, both in land use and, I mean, the gentleman that you placed from the town of Bethany Beach and Ms. Granke. And I will tell you, Ms. Granke and I have a...
I asked the city of Rehoboth to place somebody on, and the city administrator put her on. I didn't. I just called the city managers of both the towns and said, would you put somebody on who feels knowledge?
And Ms. Granke and I have agreed to disagree on certain things, but she had some very valid points.
Right.
And we listened to those.
Right.
The man from the town of Bethany Beach had some very valid points, and he understood some things. So I'm just saying it gave a poor impression of what the committee was comprised of. And that was
okay.
All.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Anyone else from the public who would like to be heard concerning this
one time,
Ms. Granke?
Mr. President and all of you, if you want me to read into the record, for the sake of timing. And I know that papers have been turned into the council, and people have abbreviated it for the.
If you would like to read it, you can come forward.
Why don't you read, Mr. Griffin?
It's a long letter. Just hit the highlights.
Will Mr. Griffin to read it, or
just a synopsis?
Okay, we'll make sure it's read before
all right.
We conclude today.
Let's conclude. Let's conclude. Then anybody else wants to speak, then we'll read that.
Mr. Baker.
Baker.
Mr. Baker was also a member of the committee.
I was. My name is Wayne Baker. I live at 17420 Minus Conaway Road. And as Jim said, I was a member of the committee. We had several meetings. I'd like to see the ordinance adopted as we submitted it. And I think it does speak to land use. And at the same time, everyone in this room speaks to our water, our water, our water. And it is the state's water, but it's also on private property. And as a member or owner of private property in this county, I think it's wrong for a town to put wells outside of their town limits where they have no jurisdiction. And then they want to come to the county government and say, we want you to protect an additional 300 acres of land because we have the right to that water. And in the meantime, all those people who own that 300 acres of land around that well field lack the beneficial use of their property, as is the people in the town did. And there's got to be some equity involved in the taking or putting additional uses on private land. And that's what this is all about. Mabel Reinecke wants the city of Rehoboth, who has wells on Old Landing Road, out on all the way out to 24, They take the water, they pipe it into Rehoboth, they charge everybody in between the wellhead and Rehoboth twice the amount for water that they charge their in-town residents. Two times, because I'm one of those people. I can't get my own well, so you have to buy from the city of Rehoboth and pay twice the rate of what the person in town would pay. And I think that's highway robbery. You're giving them the water that belongs to somebody else.
Well, you're closer to the well than they are.
No, not really, but because they're all the way out on 24. They're out at least 5 miles from town and piping water back in. They had the Lynch well field. They had well fields in Sierra Mobile City. Then they extended out on Long Neck, and then they went all the way down to 24. They ruined all the water in town. By the way, I did write a report in 1964 entitled The Water Resources of the State of Delaware for the Delaware Geological Survey. I did that while I was going to graduate school at the university. And Dr. Groot, who's one of the starters of the Delaware Geological Survey, and Bob Varin, who's in charge of water resources in the state at the time, it was published. It's in, on file to the University of Delaware. So I do have some knowledge about water, but I still think you need to protect the individual's rights to his land. And I'm a proprietor of that, and you've got to say what's fair. And everybody in this room that stood up and spoke in opposition to this ordinance wanted something for nothing. The people in the city of Lewis, they want water. They don't want it within their town limits because they've already ruined their water, the saltwater intrusion back during the World War II. So they came outside of town. They went out there and put wells in, and now they're coming back in and want to demand everybody else. It costs money to do anything. And yet they're not providing one nickel to anybody outside of their town limits to provide this water to them. Right?
I don't know. You're making a statement.
And but there's got to be equity in this. We in DNRAC, DNRAC does have the exclusive right. They mandate they control all wells in the state. You can't put a well in the ground without getting a well permit. And they stipulate all these things that you got to do as part of this well permit. It has nothing to do with land use. This is land use, what you all do here. And there's a difference. If the DNRAC wanted to, and they're not in the land use business, we are, or you are, but they can't get these things passed at the state level. They have every opportunity in the world to get this 5-year time of travel written into their regulations. They can't do it. It's a policy, but it's not enforceable to anybody. So why should you put something in that they can't get and make it in, including myself and my land use? It's not fair. It's not fair to the property owner who owns land in the rural area of this county, which is, 80% or better, and put these restrictions on us. Same thing with the wellhead freshwater groundwater recharge areas. I challenged them to prove that these maps were valid maps. Sat down and we met with the guy who came up with the map. I forgot his name now. But they never did any borings. They have really no clue as to what the top 20 feet of this ground surface looks like in Sussex County. They went by old well drillers' records, and they said, of course, they have to license the well drillers, and the well drillers bound to say what's in the top 20 feet when he's drilling a well. But, you know, I've been out on hundreds of wells in this state, and I know what the loggers do. They're not even interested in the first 20 feet. They're interested in where the water is. So that's when they start getting real serious about logging their results. But they never drilled the first well. They never took maybe half a dozen core samples, and yet they delineated 8% of Sussex County as being an excellent groundwater recharge area. They have no clue, in all honesty, as to what it really is. So why then should they come back to you, give you a map, and then say, this is the only thing that counts? We want to protect this excellent groundwater recharge area. I think they're full of baloney. I really do. And I challenge them to come out and prove to me the accuracy of this map. Is it within 500 feet, 1,000 feet, 2,000 feet? Couldn't tell you. But yet they're going to draw a line on a map. They're going to ask you to abide by where that line is drawn. And then, you got a right to appeal, but then appeals cost money. They cost time, they cost engineering, and yet he's out there to prove them wrong. So before you make something, adopt it, and make it part of the regulation, you would make sure that what you're basing it on is in fact true. And I don't think that it is totally.
Your comments on the, as being a member of the committee, on what's proposed with the distances as they were presented? Versus 150-100 and the 20 versus 100.
Let's look at this. I have public wells. I'm in the convenience store business. I have gas tanks and convenience stores and wells. And my wells are classified as public wells. And, for example, in Ellendale, it's a one-acre parcel of ground. I have a public well and also have a septic system. Now, and the lot's roughly 200 by 200 feet. So when I got my well approved, we put the well up in one corner, and we put the septic as far away as we could in the other corner, opposing corners. But yet, I was allowed to have both of them on one property. If you take a radius of 150 feet for a public well, everything's done. There's nothing. I've got gas tanks on the property, you know, all on 1 acre of ground. None of this would be permitted if you did what they said. So part of this, and look at your daycare centers, different organizations out here that have public wells, hundreds of
any things. Business on commercial business on an acre of land, you're saying?
any business where the public could come in, small restaurants, right. Where there's a well, it's a public well, deemed a public well. You can't protect those wells by 150 feet. It just, there's not enough land to do it on. So why create something that's not in real life? And Sussex County has plenty of water. We can pump 1 million gallons of water per acre all day, every day, and go right on with it. And it's sometimes it's a matter of quality of water that you get in different areas. There's more hydrogen sulfide and stuff in the shallower water. But, hey, all that can be treated. They treat it every day. It's just a matter of, you know, a few dollars per 1,000 gallons. And yet, you know, I don't understand. We're blessed with plenty of groundwater in Sussex County. We have it. It'll be our major resource. We'll have water when nobody else does. And we just got to protect it from petroleum products and other hazardous materials. And the thing in Millsboro was an incident which was never meant to happen, but it happened. And, you know, with the vaccine company down there. But if they were a little bit more, when they abandoned the site, if they pumped the tank out, it still wouldn't have happened. So
I don't know. Thank you.
But, like, the ordinance is good enough like it is without. If you're going to get, either that, it's going to be a 100-page, 500-page ordinance if you keep writing all the details. So right. You've got to keep it simple.
Thank you.
Slatcher. Dolores Slatcher, City of Seaford, 414 High Street, Seaford, Delaware. And I wasn't going to speak today, but Mrs. Granke had called me, and, you know, I want to weigh in on the western side because we've heard a lot from the eastern side, and we ought to be represented on the other side of the county, too. And someone who has 5 municipal wells, all within the corporate limits, none of them are outside at this time, and someone who's also experienced contamination because of people doing dumb things, okay, really dumb things, but it was treated, and we have that well back into production. And the corporation stepped up and took care of that one for us. I'd like to see whatever is done be on balance. Groundwater flows under the soils, and it doesn't stop at property lines. It moves back and forth. It moves from municipals to county. It moves from county to municipals. And we none control the flow of the groundwater, specifically at our property line. And I would just like to see whatever is adopted and what we end up doing, that we do it with good engineering practices, that we do it in light of the fact that we all have to work together. We have to do this on balance. It is important that we have safe drinking water for our residents, whether they be county or city residents. There is an opportunity, I think, for us all to work together and educate the public as well as educate ourselves on how to develop better, use better practices, and make it work for everybody. Thank you.
Do you think this ordinance achieves that?
I think it's a start, okay? And I think that for all of us, Seaford too, we had to develop one also. We haven't had to work with this in the past, okay? It hasn't been something that we've done. I think ours will get amended as we go along, And as we see things from engineering and as we see things from the state come down, then I think we will be modifying some of our approaches, but we will be working very closely with the developers to try to get the best management practices out of them and still, to some degree, accept development. I don't think we can afford not to have development, okay?
If you had to go outside your city limits, this ordinance, Jim...
it would be overlaid on us.
And this ordinance doesn't give anybody the power to take property, does it?
No.
No.
No. In other words, if Seaford had to go outside of city limits, they'd have to negotiate and buy, right?
Yeah. Well, they have the recharge area. They have the power of eminent domain if they need it for a municipal purpose.
Outside of their. Outside of their jurisdiction.
I guess they could annex and then do it, but.
Well, they'd have to have permission of the property owner.
It'd be a contorted process.
Okay, but my point is, if they have to negotiate, say with a property owner, a farmer or whatever, whoever owns this parcel, during a negotiation, the farmer has the ability to say, okay, you only have to buy this much, or you have to buy, you know, the buffer too, because we have buffers in everything. I was just sitting here thinking, we got buffers for. Around agricultural uses, we got buffers around airports, we got buffers around mobile home parks, tidal waters, tax ditches. This is just basically another buffer. So the farmer has the ability, or the landowner, to sell whatever size he wants. So if he doesn't want to sell the buffer part and wants to keep it because he hunts it or something, he has the ability, right?
Well, he could use
it
for agricultural purposes.
Okay, so
you're talking about structures being built.
Basically, you could have an agreement without
fear
buying.
My concern is, what is the fear of having these ample buffers if the state says, Department of Natural Resources said some of them aren't adequate? In the negotiation, aren't these buffers going to be something they negotiate?
I don't know about. I understand about where the 5-year travel though. What does that do, and some of those type things? I mean,
we're talking about 150 feet or 100, whatever these numbers.
You're talking about distance. You're talking a 5-year travel and all that. That has some bearing. What could happen?
Could we do this, gentlemen?
I'm just curious.
Since Ms. Slatcher is at the podium and has made her statement, could we sort of finish up with her?
I would like to ask Mrs. Then we can go ahead and complain.
Dolores, has the city yet adopted theirs?
We did adopt one. In fact, actually, we've mirrored this one of the county with intentions that it as we move along, we think it will work for us right now. Right now, we don't have any wells affected. We're already developed around all of our wells, so there's just no impact on Seaford right now, okay? And we were looking at it for the future. And when we get to that next need, and we're several million gallons away from that next need, okay, we get to that next need, then we would be looking at what we would buy and protecting that land at that time. But we would be buying.
So you adopted the same safe zone?
We did that.
Okay.
Has your plan been certified with that?
Pardon?
Has your plan been certified?
No, we don't. Our plan does not. Our comprehensive plan, you mean? It doesn't go forward until the end of February. We were trying to wait for you all to see what you were doing.
See how bad we get beat up and then you can go.
So you put the 20 feet in like we did at
the time. We did at this time because, again, it has no impact on our present wells and even our future ones when we looked at it in the growth zone where we would be going.
And once you go outside of city limits, your city ordinance doesn't apply. You'd be under the county ordinance.
That's correct.
Right.
Okay. And really, we would do everything possible to avoid going outside the corporate limits because we do not serve outside the corporate limits, either water or sewer, and nor electric. We don't serve anything outside the corporate limits, and we want to keep it that way if at all practical.
What's the distance around your present wells that have been developed around?
I got to tell you, it's right next door to them. Everything is developed right up around our present wells, okay?
50 feet, 20 feet?
We would be lucky if we had 50 in a lot of areas. Okay. Yeah, they're all developed.
But you've had no problem?
We have had the problem. We had the one problem with the one well, and it was contaminated, and there's a Calgon system on it for which a corporation is paying for that treatment process, but it's treated and it's back in production.
Okay. Thank you. Anyone else?
It's DuPont. DuPont's one of those.
Gilbert.
Good morning, guys.
Good morning.
My name is Gilbert Holt. I live at 612 Second Street in Truebell Acres. I also work for the Board of Public Works in Lewis. And I wasn't planning on doing any speaking today, but there's been a couple of statements made a few minutes ago that kind of raised my hair on the back of my neck. I figured I better make something very clear to everybody. One, Lewis never intentionally destroyed or did anything to their water. That was a natural process of salt intrusion, and it was done 50 years ago darn near, and the city had the foresight to go out and buy land. The city has tried a couple of years ago to annex that land in, and it didn't work at the time because of the land use and the comprehensive plan use for the state of Delaware. Now, I very much want to protect our wells. I also very much know that very much want to see a wellhead protection program set up through the county. I know you're under the gun to do it, so is the city of Lewis. The city of Lewis is still working on theirs. But and so I want to see something passed. My only question is, and I think you guys need to understand that the 150 foot that everybody's been talking about is not that far. 100 foot is less, of course. But, I mean, if you look at what Lewis's wells right now, they've got great big piles of dirt right beside our number 3 well. They had the millions off of Route 1 beside them until the contractor was forced to move them. And that just shows you how easily something can be contaminated without ever anybody even knowing about it. So my only statement is, please consider moving the wellhead protection area out to 150 foot. Other than that, I don't see anything wrong with it. I mean, everybody has their own opinions on all that, and it is subject to opinions, of course. But the 150 foot area is very important. If you want to ask any questions, I'll certainly answer them.
In the proposed ordinance, for 50,000 gallons or greater, wells pumping 50 or greater, it was proposed at 100. For 50,000 or less, it was proposed at 20. Do you have any comment on the 20-foot radius for the under 50,000?
Well, if it's a public well,
it's going to be greater than 50. Then.
If it's a public well, no, not necessarily.
Okay.
Not all of them pump 50,000 gallons a day.
Right, you do.
However, you know, it should be moved up to at least 100 foot. You need some wellhead protection area. I know Dolores from the city of Seaford, theirs are right up against each other. And you got to be very careful. And I know there's a lot of development coming down the road for the Lewis area, especially across the street and around our well area. And we're talking recharge area, and it's very important to start protecting it now. Finley, I think you were talking about the five-year time of travel. Five-year time of travel, the way I understand it, nobody was looking to protect that far out. They were just trying to inform people that if something is dropped on that ground five years from now, it could affect your well. That gives you time to do something about it. Lost my train of thought, sorry. But I think that's the main. Lewis, a worker said that nobody can prove that how far out the wellhead protection area should be. Well, I know that for Lewis and Rehoboth area, the Delaware Geological Survey was contracted by the Source Water Protection Branch of the DENREC to do a very extensive study of our area for wellhead protection. They did a computerized model. It's available from the Delaware Geological Survey, and I can tell you, gentlemen, you got to be very careful. Lewis's water don't just come from our well field. It comes from all that whole area.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Kevin.
Anyone else before we close the public hearing? Let the record show that no one else asked to be recognized.
Read the letter from the Sierra Club.
Says Sierra Club statement, read draft land use plan, water and sewer element, November 25, 2007.
Although the draft plan contains reference to the need to control impervious surfaces, there is no direct call to establish an impervious surface ratio ordinance. Perhaps the reason that the current draft plan does not cite the need for specific ordinances intrinsic to sustaining its implementation is found in the fact that the county failed to implement the recommended ordinances contained in the previous comprehensive plan. The absence of direction, directives, and specificity will alleviate the potential for further future embarrassment. Consequently, in consideration of the aborted proposal submitted by the appointed committee charged with formulating such an ordinance, there is little faith that conformity to the statutory mandate regarding wellhead protection will ever be realized. End of quote.
Okay. Could I make a comment regarding this issue? I've been told that this is one of the certification issues regarding the proposed plan. We haven't received anything in writing from the state at this point, but we are supposed to receive it by the end of this week.
You were supposed to have it yesterday, weren't you? December the 17th?
They told us before on the 17th.
So then maybe we should report. Maybe all their comments should be null and void because they didn't do it on time.
Well,
that letter to public hearing said that.
If we were awaiting a promised plus report concerning this particular ordinance, we don't have another meeting before the end of the year, so it would have to be put back on for whichever would be the next available meeting in January. Although state law says we should adopt it by the end of the year.
I did talk to Connie Holland yesterday, and she told me that Kent County has not and will not have theirs adopted by the end of December, and that she did not think that would be a problem.
I would recommend that if you are going to hold this in abeyance, to leave the record open so we could make those comments a part of the record when they're received.
Yep, no problem. You close the public hearing? Close the hearing, leave the record open.
You will close the public hearing. My recommendation is that you leave the record open for the receipt of the plus report.
Plus. Lewis wants to
until such time as you take action on the matter. Or I think the city of Lewis indicated the desire to submit, so if you want to expand, to just leave the record open to the world at large, you could do that too.
Need a motion?
I make that motion, Mr. President, to defer on an ordinance to adopt Chapter 89, source water protection, leave the record open for the world. Motion, Mr. Rogers, seconded by?
Second.
Mr. Cole, to defer on the ordinance until plus reports, and for the city of Lewis to make written comment. Any questions? And anyone else can make written comment.
Anybody.
Yeah, written comment only. Mr. Cole.
Yes.
Mr. Phillips.
Yes.
Mr. Rogers.
Yes.
Mr. Jones.
I got one question, Mr. Baker.
Yes.
Yeah, here, we got plenty of time, Mr.
I'm here all day.
Oh, that's right. Thanks. Do we have that in writing from the state? I mean, you know, not that I don't trust them, but, you know, they do speak.
I don't have that in writing, but I was told that they have 20 days. I presume that's 20 business days, which would bring it to December 26th. So.
Okay. Yes.
Yes, motion's carried. Mr. Archie.
I'm not done yet. Let's sit back down.
You got a motion?
Sure. Well, so you're on borrowed time anyway. So
that's
no
right. My item on the agenda is the West Rehoboth or the Whitman Record and Associates contract amendment number 5 to the North Coastal Planning Area, and it's to provide the initial engineering for the Angola Neck Sanitary Sewer District. As council knows, we've had a referendum pass, and we're now looking at providing service to Woods on Herring Creek. Yep. So we're preparing to start the design process for the facilities there. So we want to do the aerial photography for it, and we also want to use our services to help us in the design of the facilities to go to a temporary treatment alternative for Woods on Herring Creek. So there's two items, plus some interior work to the Woodson Heron Creek facilities. So we have like three parts. Yeah, some upgrades to the existing pumping stations. So there's like three parts to this. The proposed contract cost is $297,724. That's already been approved by our assistant county attorney and by our internal auditor. And I do have a motion.
Well, we can pump a muscle pump. We can put a muscle pump. I do understand.
That is a small portion of what the ultimate design contract will be. That's only for a very small piece of it. But it is all the aerial photography we need to do the Angola Neck area. So that takes care of all of it.
The whole nine yards. Okay.
Yes. I have a proposed motion. Would you like me to read it? Be it moved that based upon the recommendation of the Sussex County Engineering Department, the Sussex County Council President be authorized to execute contract amendment number 5 to its original contract with Whitman, Reckhart & Associates, LLP, for the North Coastal Planning Area for Angola Neck Sanitary Sewer District Pumping Station number 3, Woods on Heron Creek, at a cost not to exceed $297,724.
So moved.
Second.
I have a motion, Mr. Jones, second, Mr. Phillips. Just read Mr. Archie. Questions? Mr. Cole?
Yes.
Phillips?
Based on the recommendation, yes.
Mr. Rogers?
Yes.
Mr. Jones?
Yes.
Yes, motion is carried.
And best luck today.
Mr. Ashman.
Good morning. I have two items on the agenda this morning. One is I'm here to request permission to prepare and post notices for the Banks Plaza expansion of the Dagsboro-Frankford Sanitary Sewer District. The area includes the old Banks Hardware building outside of Frankford, the adjacent cemetery, and two parcels north of Frankford Avenue. That's the area in the bright yellow here. This is the Banks Hardware property, the cemetery, and two parcels to the north side of Frankford Avenue. The old Banks Hardware building has undergone renovations to be a commercial complex consisting of 13 units to be known as Banks Plaza. We have contacted the adjacent property owners on the north side of Frankford Avenue and presented them the potential costs they may incur. We have since received correspondence that they wish to be included. The total area to be annexed is approximately 6.75 acres, and it is contiguous to the existing sanitary sewer district. Concept plan approval for Banks Plaza began in September, and final concept approved December 12, 2007. Request for annexation on November 12th was a modified annexation request, and requirements were all met on December 12th with the approval of the concept plan. The developer will be subject to total system connection charges of $73,255 or $5,635 per EDU. Based on the July 1st, 2007, June 30th, 2008 rate. Questions?
No, sir.
Okay. I have a motion if you would like me to read it.
I'd love to hear it. Sooner the better.
Be it moved by the Sussex County Council that the Sussex County Engineering Department is authorized to prepare and post notices for the extension of the Dagsboro-Frankford Sanitary Sewer District boundary to include Banks Plaza and adjacent properties as presented on December 18th, 2007.
I have a motion, Mr. Jones, seconded by Mr. Phillips. That was just Reverend Mr. Ashman. Any questions? Being none, Mr. Cole.
Yes.
Mr. Phillips.
Yes.
Mr. Rogers.
Yes.
Mr. Jones.
Yes.
Yes. Motion is carried. Next one, Mr. Ashman.
You're on roll, John.
Next is also permission to prepare and post notices for the Byard expansion of the Miller Creek Sanitary Sewer District. The area includes primarily the entire Byard planning area as described in the South Coastal Planning Study, except those areas to the southwest previously included in Johnson's Corner. The area is contiguous to the Miller Creek Sanitary Sewer District. There are two projects at this time which have requested annexation into the district, the Estuary and the Woodlands. On your map, the Estuary is all the large single-hatched area, and the Woodlands is this small double-hatched area to the northwest. Excuse me. These projects could be annexed without including the entire area. However, the engineering department has made a decision to propose annexing the balance of the planning area as a way to better plan and serve the large portion of the environmentally sensitive development area for sewer service. The estuary project will be installing a major portion of the regional infrastructure, as they will be disturbing and realigning many of the roadways in the area. The regional infrastructure installed by the developer will also alleviate capacity problems at Pump Station 30 in the future, and where the project installs mainline infrastructure, a lateral connection to those offside parcels will be provided. The estuary has been approved for 1,052 lots by planning and zoning, and their zoning for the project is already in place. The annexation area we are requesting is approximately 2,100 acres. Concept plan for the estuary has been approved, and the woodlands is pending the connection point through the estuary. Developers will be subject to total connection charges of $3,235 per EDU based on this year's rates. We will be sending letters to all property owners with frequently asked questions and an explanation of the boundaries. And there will be a public hearing on January 17th, 2008 at the Roxana Fire Hall, and we will report those results of the public hearing to council for a decision on February 5th, 2008.
Can I ask you something?
You can ask me.
This is absurd, I think, because if somebody gets in this district, if they create it, and they're out on these outer edges, they're all at the mercy of the developers as it moves out from wherever the sewer service is. So they may never get sewer, even though they get it. So, I mean, when you do this, you create so many problems. Now, whose idea is this? It wasn't generated by the property owners, was it?
No, not to include the areas to the east and the west. That was
in the past, and it's not your fault. I'm not aiming this at you. But in the past, what the county did is when we had a sewer district, somebody would come in and they'd go through a zoning process and some conceptual plans and everything. And we'd know what we were annexing and what we were getting. Now when you do this, we lose control. We can get... It's helter-skelter. And at what density are you going to develop this at? At 4 units to the acre? Is that what it's going to all be sized at?
Most likely.
This area can't afford to have any more development. Russell, I don't know where this is coming from. This is crazy. We've lost it now. Totally. This is the most absurd request I've ever seen, especially when we haven't seen any request from the property owners. Now, if this is good planning, clue me in where I'm wrong. The roads can't handle it. Go out in that area. The estuary was one of the most controversial subdivisions, and it only got 2 units to the acre. They'll come back now at 4 units to the acre. People are screaming out there because they moved to get away from it all. Tell me where we're going with this. I don't get it.
Okay.
Go ahead.
This is the... Do you want to handle it?
Either way.
Okay. Well, you can add whatever I don't cover. This is all in our South Coastal Planning Area, which is based on the environmentally sensitive developing zone, which already allows 4 units per acre. We feel like we're just implementing the plan. This does give the engineering department and the county council the authority to prohibit any private wastewater developers or providers from coming into the area. It gives us an opportunity to control that because now they're in a sewer district. As you know, the estuary at one time was proposed for private wastewater provision, and we were able to get around that and bring them into our sewer district, so we're happy with that. It allows us to control what is going on in the area because it is in the sewer district, and the proposed facilities will be all in accordance with the South Coastal Planning Area. I think John mentioned, in addition to them building facilities that'll serve that area, oversizing and those kind of things, the proposed facilities also will serve a regional need, will serve the needs of the expanding Fenwick Island area. So improvements to our pump station 30 in that area will utilize force mains that are being built here. So
before
we think it's all part
drive
of the planning
there and
process.
See what it looks like. It's outrageous. Now this is we've gone beyond, we're just moving into an area, Russell. This is this is not good planning to take an area, and you know what the area looks like. Yeah. To take this area and create it with one big swoop like this, the people still will not be getting sewer service, and we're going to be all at the mercy of the developers as they do the different things. So nobody's going to benefit from this for years to come. All it does is give higher densities on these little roads that nobody can ill afford, and we'll have more estuaries and more of this other stuff, more development going out there, more urban sprawl, more degradation to the environmentally sensitive area. This is anything but environmentally sensitive.
Russell, did you just say that most of this area is 4 units to acre growing?
In accordance with the environmentally sensitive developing zone, we have planned for 4 units per acre, whether it's in the sewer district or out of it. They could come in, theoretically request it.
Right.
Wait, what's the estuary got? What's the density?
The estuary is somewhere around 1.5
like units per acre.
How come they're not four if they're under this big thing that they can get four if they want?
I think it's because of concerns that have come up through the planning and zoning process and their own market.
They got turned down for going to an RPC and they had to do single family homes.
And that all took place as part of the process. We're not avoiding the process. You all will still have the final say over what takes place in this area.
Once you do this, it's over. You got nothing but farmland in Johnson's Crossroads or Johnson's Corner, whatever, and you got now another big bunch of farmland. You're doing more to destroy agriculture in this county and the rural way of life by expanding, and that's the state of Delaware has just criticized this council for approving these large development districts. And here you go again. Big blunder, boys, big blunder. But keep it up.
All right, what are you asking for, Mr. Eichmann?
You're looking for a public workshop?
Permission to prepare and post notices for the expansion.
This could be reduced. This area could be reduced by the council and based on public comment.
Based on public comment, yes.
Oh, no,
and we're going to hold a public hearing at the Roxana Fire Hall.
Yes.
Right. And I think he's giving you that date. So
well, the speculators. Anybody who owns this land is going to wish, oh, yeah, well, I want to get in because it'll be told, it'll make your land more valuable. It'll make your land more valuable. So, we'll do it. We'll do it. Why would they say no?
But you had a petition by the requisite number of people to...
No petition.
It's an expansion. It's not extension. A new sewer district.
Okay.
When was the last time we did something like this with no petition?
Well,
of this size,
Russell. That's to form a new one.
Wait. Oak Orchard expansion.
Yep.
We have approached them.
All right. Do you need a motion?
I have a motion.
Let's hear it.
Be it moved by Sussex County Council that the Sussex County Engineering Department is authorized to prepare and post notices for the extension of the Miller Creek Sanitary Sewer District boundary to include the Bayard planning area as presented on December 18th, 2007.
So moved.
I have a motion, Mr. Phillips, seconded by Mr. Jones. Questions? I have one. Mr. Griffin, can we expand this without... the proper number of signatures and request?
Well, that's to form a new district. You can expand it, yes.
So you can expand it without the request.
what is it? Can you remember doing this, Dale?
Mr. Becker just said Oak Orchard.
One time, maybe. Maybe it was different reasons. I've never seen anything this rural. Oak Orchard is at least has got 20, no, Route 24 and Route 5, and it's called a small town, a village. I mean, there's not much here, Dale. This has never happened, anything like this.
I have a motion second. Mr. Cole.
Well, I'll vote no, obviously, because it's an example of excessive poor planning. It's an example of what the state of Delaware doesn't like us to do. It's also an example of not even a request from any of these property owners. That is all farmland. I'll bet you there's not 35, 40 families probably living on all those big parcels of land when you add them all up. And to put it all in a big development district, in a big sewer district, I mean, is just wrong, dead wrong. We ought to wait as we get requests. Then we know what we're getting. We'll either we like the development, it fits in with the area, or it does not. The estuary came in and asked for a bunch of townhouses and a bunch of, like Americana Bayside, and when you ride through there, the people raised hell and a lot of pressure, and the planning and zoning was smart enough to say no to it, and we even said no, I believe, because they came back and did a single-family home development in an agricultural residential district, and it kind of fits in. It's still too much. It's just like what you did up there at above Milton. It's just like a lot of these other outside of Del Mar, and now we're doing it again here, and it's a big mistake.
Mr. Phillips.
All we're doing today is creating a forum for which the public can comment on this proposal, and I'm certainly not one to deny the public that
opportunity. Public hadn't even asked for this.
Excuse me, Mr. Cole.
And a public hadn't asked for it.
And I'm not one to deny the public the opportunity to comment, so I vote yes.
Mr. Rogers. Mr. Jones. I'm going to vote no. I would be more comfortable if we'd had requests for it. I do favor sewer districts, but without a request from the people out there, and I realize we're just asking for public input and to go out for that, but when we get requests out there, I think we should deal with it at that time. Motion is denied.
Could we consider possibly including the area with the estuary and that where we do have
We do have a request from the estuary and another in the other subdivision
that have been
and we have
through the planning process.
Correct. And we have a contiguous path in place with the state land there, with the state police. And we could bring it back in with just showing those developments.
I have no problem with that. If we got requests for it, I'll support that. Why don't you just change your
motion? Okay, so I changed my motion to just include those two projects and the contiguous.
Well, we just voted on it, right?
But you voted down
the whole
overall
area.
He's proposing to make a revised motion for a smaller area.
For the estuary and the, what's the other
estuary, the woods, the woodlands, and the, we need this state police piece of ground here that makes
it continue. Yeah, I thought you said we had no request, but if you've got requests out there, then that's a different motion.
Yeah, this is all one big request from the estuary, and this is from the woodlands.
Okay. Then amend your motion. Let's hear it.
Being moved by Sussex County Council, Sussex County Engineering Department is authorized to prepare and post notices for the extension of the Miller Creek Sanitary Sewer District to include the projects known as the Estuary and the Woodlands and the contiguous piece of property that connects them to the Miller Creek Sanitary Sewer District.
No move.
I have a motion, Mr. Jones, seconded by?
Second.
Mr. Phillips. Any questions on the motion? Mr. Cole?
Yes.
Mr. Phillips?
Once again, all we're doing is creating a forum for the public to comment. I vote yes.
Mr. Rogers?
Yes.
Mr. Jones?
Yes.
I vote yes. My, you guys are so cooperative today. I appreciate your attitudes. Motion's passed.
Thank you.
See how easy it is, Mr. Eichmann?
How those babies?
Grant, Susan.
Russell. Laurel Historical Society?
I'd like to give them $2,500 to the Laurel Historical Society for the cookhouse that they're doing.
So moved.
From your community improvements?
Community improvements, yes.
So moved.
I have a motion, Mr. Cole, second Mr. Jones, to give $2,500 of my capital improvements to, or community improvements to Laurel Historical Society. Mr. Cole?
Yes.
Mr. Phillips?
Yes.
Mr. Rogers?
Yes.
Mr. Jones?
Yes.
Yes, motion is carried. All right, old business. We're gonna run these things out of here.
Mr. Dukes, is it possible there are seven or eight people here, at least the ones where people have sat through the whole meeting, to do that first so they could get back to where?
Which application? I don't know which one it is.
Number
which,
three.
Nine.
Route 9.
Route 9? They're by Route 9?
Anybody else here for anything else?
Mr. Couples.
Orndorff?
Okay.
All right, let's do those two. We'll do CU 1703 and 1752 and then 1697 and 1701.
I know you're sad to leave, Susie, but you. Huh? I know you're sad to leave.
I'm so sad.
Shane, you're just tickled to be here, right? You're just tickled to be here.
Let's go. Quit talking. Let's go.
Put my grant.
Which